Five journalists. That's the missiles hitting the NASA hospital in Khan Yunis. Will have a full report and ask when will there be investigations. Back here in the UK,
with more than 400 people arrested at Notting Hill Carnival this year, how safe and suitable is the event for the streets of West London? I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Notting Hill.
As a newspaper poll shows that the government are suffering a huge collapse in confidence over handling the migrant issue, leader of the Reform UK, Nigel Farage.
Ask yourself a question. Whose side is this government on? Is it on your side or is it on the side of young, undocumented males coming into Britain?
And later this morning, he'll talk about the mass deportation and showing they have a sense of humour. The government puts out the housing minister on the day we learn that the boss, the housing secretary, has three homes. I look forward to that. All after the 7 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Foreign Secretary David Lammy has joined international condemnation of Israel's double strike on a hospital in Gaza. At least 20 people, including five journalists, were killed in the attack on the building in Khan Yunis yesterday. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says it was a tragic mishap. Danielle Bett from the British Jewish organisation Yakad says it's a reckless conflict.
Unfortunately, it's not the first time that we've seen something like this. We've seen far too many journalists and aid workers be killed, and it's the result of an ongoing war that doesn't have a long-term aim or plan, and it's just that the war needs to end.
The Home Office is reportedly preparing to return dozens of migrants to France as part of a one-in, one-out deal. About 100 asylum seekers are now believed to be in detention after crossing the English Channel. Nigel Farage, who has described the treaty with Paris as unworkable, will set out Reform UK's illegal migration policy later. Police say the Notting Hill Carnival had far fewer incidents of serious violence than in recent years. Officers made a total of 423 arrests over the two main days, 52 of which a result of using facial recognition cameras. There were two stabbings, neither of which resulted in life-threatening injuries. Accident investigators are working to establish the cause of a helicopter crash on the Isle of Wight. Three people died and a fourth remains in hospital after the aircraft came down during a flying lesson yesterday morning. It took off from Sandown Airport just after 9 o'clock. Dan Sabani runs the airfield.
It's very easy for people to speculate. I started doing it earlier and I had to stop myself. So I think it's important for people just to calm down a little bit. Let the accident investigators do their job, OK? And then you know, we can all learn from whatever's gone wrong.
The latest industry figures show food prices are rising at their fastest pace for 18 months. The British Retail Consortium says food inflation rose to 4.2% this month, up from 4% in July. Prices of chocolate, butter and eggs all went up. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 93.21. It closed up 12 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair, and if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after seven on Tuesday, the 26th of August. International condemnation growing now after Israel bombs the same Gaza hospital twice. Listen, every life is of the same value, but what has excited much of the media is, of course, includes five journalists. It's important to realise 15 other people were involved. 20 fatalities. We'll give you a full report on that. Back home, the growing crisis in the hospitality industry. This, of course, from a government that promised growth, but it's going completely the other way. Half of UK job losses are in that sector. Mark Wrigley runs the Atlas Bar in Manchester. He says it's incredibly hard to work in hospitality at the moment.
A lot of sleepless nights for a lot of people. we probably generate £300,000 or £400,000 for the government, this one business, and yet I get nothing from it.
Staying in the UK, but back to London. Another Notting Hill Carnival now with a record number of arrests, but as ever, carnivals are goers are saying, no, don't stop the carnival. Here's some of the people who were there.
It's a convenient way to box off black people, as usual. So no, it shouldn't be moved to Hyde Park.
Why would you? This is about us recognising each other.
In a related story, schools in racism crisis, including children of four reception pupils sent home for being racist. Ask yourself, I appreciate they can use inappropriate language or whatever it might be, signs, I don't know. Does a four-year-old actually know what he, she is saying? Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson.
It's completely unacceptable if we're seeing that level of racism within our schools, but I do support schools in taking action where it does happen because it is important.
And clearly they enjoy a laugh. The government decided to put out a housing minister on the day it's decided that the housing secretary and the deputy prime minister has almost as many houses as Foxton's. Three. We'll talk with him later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It was around 9:50 a.m. local time yesterday. The first strike hit the Nasser hospital in Khan Yunis in Gaza, with a second missile hitting roughly 4 minutes later. It's known, apparently, as a double-tap strike. The second being caught live on the Arabian network Al-Had TV. As I've said earlier, 20 people lost their lives, including 5 journalists, but 15 aren't journalists. And this has provoked widespread condemnation from allies and world leaders, including French President Emmanuel Macron, British Foreign Secretary David Lammy. Meanwhile, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the attack was a tragic mishap. Giving a press conference yesterday, Brigadier General Effie Defrin from the IDF said there will be a full-scale investigation.
The IDF does not intentionally target civilians. The IDF makes every effort to mitigate harm to civilians while ensuring the safety of our troops. Any incident that raises concern in this regard is addressed by the relevant mechanisms in the IDF. The Chief of the General Staff has instructed that an inquiry be conducted immediately to understand the circumstances of what happened and how it happened. Reporting from an active war zone carries immense risk, especially in a war with a terrorist organization such as Hamas, who cynically hides behind the civilian population. As always, we will present our findings as transparently as possible.
It's worth noting some of Israel's closest allies there are expressing condemnation. I've mentioned France, Germany as well. And here's US President Donald Trump.
When did this happen?
This happened overnight, today.
I didn't know that.
Any reaction to this?
Are you going to talk to about it? I don't want to see it.
At the same time, we have to end that whole nightmare. I'm the one that got the hostages out. I got them out. All of them.
Let's bring into the conversation Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, who's a former IDF spokesperson and a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defence of Democracies. Thank you for coming on, Lieutenant Colonel. So we hear from someone yesterday that this will be investigated by the relevant mechanisms, to quote directly, within the IDF. What are those relevant mechanisms? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Well, there are mechanisms, or there's a task force, which is independent outside of the chain of command, which is... gets its authority from the chief of staff, and they are there in order to investigate exactly issues like this. What appears to have happened is a misidentification on the ground, where Israeli troops operating nearby misidentified and thought that what they were seeing was a Hamas cell or Hamas terrorists that were actually collecting intelligence on them, when it, in fact, it appears to have been journalists. And I think that what Israel will have to provide swift and clear answers about are two issues. One, the initial mistake of misidentification, and then the second thing, which will be more difficult to explain, given the visuals and what we understand now, the decision to strike for the second time, which, as we understand, probably was the more lethal one, and should probably more easily have been prevented. So there's a lot to answer for. I hope that the IDF will do it swiftly and transparently and provide those findings for people to see and understand.
You've been a member of the IDF. You have far greater understanding. And I've read in the past that it's one of the most brilliantly skilled military forces on the planet. And yet they have fatal incompetence. 184 journalists have been killed since the start of the latest war. The entire Vietnam War, only 63 journalists lost their lives. Why this staggering level of incompetence from the IDF?
So I don't think it is incompetence.
So you hit a hospital once and then you decide to hit it again. How would you describe that, Lieutenant Colonel?
No. So I'll explain. The issue here is that what Hamas has done is that they have they've basically taken the journalistic profession and hijacked it for their terrorist purposes.
How on earth have these five individuals been hijacked? Do explain.
No. So I'll separate. You asked a general, broader question. I was very clear and unequivocal about what I feel about this incident, the first incident, mm-hmm. the incident that we're talking about. But if I could put things into context, I think that is important. What we see in Gaza is Hamas hijacking the journalistic profession, whether it is actual active Hamas members and combatants that are putting on press vests occasionally when they're out on the field, and there's ample evidence of that happening, or where there's journalists who are part-timing and freelancing also for Hamas government communications or propaganda efforts. I don't think that what Israel is doing in Gaza is incompetence. I think that what we're seeing is a terrorist organization hijacking journalists. And if I were a journalist, I would be enraged not only by the fact that my fellow media workers have been killed, but that an organization is so putting people at risk.
Nothing gets near the importance of human lives, and sadly more have been lost. But one does have to, lastly, address this: what this has done for the global reputation of Israel and the IDF, and it is worsening almost by the day. Is it now not time to, instead of using the relevant mechanisms of the IDF to investigate this ever-growing number of killings, you bring in an independent organisation, whether it's Britain, whether it's Germany, whatever it might be, a country that you trust, and let them actually find out what's gone wrong, Lieutenant Colonel?
I think that it's very important to be transparent and to have swift findings.
Then let's have a German body or a British body investigate them.
With Britain's standing and with the statements about supporting a Palestinian state...
I understand. That's why I mentioned Germany as well. I can understand that you don't have much love for Sir Keir Starmer at the moment. Germany, then.
I think it's important to do it swiftly and transparently. I don't think that Israel is going to have...
But don't you think that would be healthy?
I think that there are two things that are important. One, to do it quickly and swiftly, and two, that there are consequences and actions taken for those that were involved in this accident or incident and who made wrong decisions.
All right. I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you for picking up on the call. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus is a former IDF spokesperson and a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Now, let's get an idea of what it is like to work in that hospital prior to those explosions. And we speak again with Dr. Nick Maynard, consultant surgeon at Oxford University Hospital, volunteering just a few weeks ago at that hospital, and as indeed has appeared on the show. Can you give us an idea, prior to the explosions, obviously, what the conditions would have been like there, Doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for asking me on. They are appalling, the conditions in Nasser Hospital. I left 4 weeks ago. The hospital is on its knees. It's the last remaining partly functioning major hospital in Gaza, the only hospital really capable of dealing with major trauma, but it's on its knees. It cannot function properly. And this, of course, is another devastating blow. To refer to your previous caller, this wasn't incompetence by the Israeli military. This was a deliberate targeting. We've seen this on multiple occasions. I do not believe a word that spokesman said. No one has any faith there'll be an independent investigation. There weren't just five journalists killed. There were two medical students killed, two medical students whom I taught in the hospital 4 weeks ago. They were on the intensive care unit, being taught at the bedside of a patient when they were killed. where they bombed yesterday, it is not incompetence. The Israeli military knew perfectly well where they bombed was immediately above the intensive care unit, immediately above the operating theatre complex. This is a deliberate targeting of hospitals, the like of which we have seen on multiple occasions over the last 22 months.
Doctor, you're a very well-educated man. Can you divine why they would choose to do this?
Part of their deliberate policy to examples of this. I don't think we need to question it anymore. It is a clear, deliberate policy to destroy the whole infrastructure of the healthcare system, to destroy the whole infrastructure of living in Gaza as part of their policy of ethnically cleansing and carrying out genocide. And I think the evidence for that is overwhelming now.
Lastly, do you want to say a word about the two medical students who were lost and your memories of working with them?
My heart and love goes out to them and their families. I remember them well. Literally 4 weeks ago, I was teaching them. It is yet another deep, deep tragedy and a completely preventable tragedy if our Western governments actually held Israel to account and stopped these atrocities.
I'm very grateful for you finding time for this morning. I know you're a busy man. Very busy man. Thank you, Dr. Nick Maynard, consultant surgeon at Oxford University Hospital, who, as he said, just 4 weeks ago was working at that very hospital. Well, how do we move this forward? There has to be, doesn't there? I know Israel is not inclined towards the United Nations. I understand Israel is not inclined towards the United Kingdom because of Keir Starmer's position over Benjamin Netanyahu being arrested if he came to London. But a country such as Germany, they seem to keep closer links. There must be an agency, surely, because it's no longer right, is it, that relevant mechanisms of the IDF investigate these killings? Is it? Take your calls on that. Back home.
With more than 400 people arrested at Notting Hill Carnival this year, how safe and suitable is the event for the streets of West London? I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Notting Hill.
Just past 7:16 now, LBC News headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
Israel is facing growing international condemnation over an attack on a hospital in Gaza. Ministers are reportedly ready to send more than 100 small boats migrants back across the English Channel. Accident investigators are working to establish the cause of a helicopter crash on the Isle of Wight yesterday. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 remains closed anti-clockwise between junctions 25 at the A10 and 24 at Porter's Bar. It's because a lorry is on fire and there are delays from before junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. In fact, it's almost back to the M11. And the surrounding routes are also extremely congested, especially the A10 southbound coming down from Cheshunt. Only one lane's open on the M1 northbound just after junction 10 at Luton Airport. That's because a lorry has overturned and there are queues on the approach. On the trains on London Overground, the Suffragette line is suspended between Barking and Barking Riverside. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Victoria and Bakerloo lines.
LBC.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn. Dad's cooking tea. Ash is upstairs spinning tunes. And the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas Tariffs. British Gas. Taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Summer's nearly over. It's time to get back to real life. Luckily, Cinch has got all the essentials sorted. And we're not talking about new textbooks. Let's see. The biggest range of cars to buy entirely online? Check. Free 90-day warranty? Sorted. And fat-free Cinch servicing at a Marshall store near you? Absolutely cinched it. Everything you need and not a pencil case in sight. Cinch it for yourself today. Visit cinch.co.uk. Comparison against equivalent retailers. Visit cinch.co.uk/range claim. Terms and exclusions apply.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity.
we actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
19 minutes after 7. A couple of headlines, news stories that are making the news. This is on the front page of some of the papers. Then to your calls, Jason, you'll be the first caller. The other big story, though, I have to say, is this idea that the government have failed, and the poll going against them showing how many people feel they have not got a grip of the migrant issue, if you will, and how Nigel Farage will, I'm going to use the word politically, cash in on this. He's making a speech later today. Our political editor is already on her way so that she can attend that. We'll hear from her later. Daily Mail, Farage unveils plans for mass deportations. Yes, you did hear that word correctly. The Daily Telegraph, Starmer sides with courts over the people. The Times, they're the ones that have done the latest survey. UK prepares to send 100 small boat arrivals back. Dear God, before I went off on holiday, I thought it was about to happen. Clearly, it still hasn't happened. Just two other at random. The Daily Express telling us robotic surgery revolution can help cut NHS waiting lists. And an intriguing story on the front page of the Daily Mirror. 15,000 children sent home for discriminatory or racist behaviour. The highest number on record, double the amount of 2020-21. So what's that, 5 years or so? It's doubled. But some children as young as four, that's what I'm going to look at. Can a four-year-old, I'm sure he, she, they can say words that I won't say, I have no doubt, but do they know? Do they pick up the word, a disobliging word referring to black people, Asian people? They pick it up from mum and or dad or brother and or sister. Do they actually know what they're saying if you're four? The LBC app also has the UK ready to deport 100 migrants within weeks. And let's just pick another one at random and tell you... Oh, right, yes, indeed. The Ukraine is turning warfare into a sky-fi battle of machines using more drones, reports the Sky News website. OK, Jason in Maryland. Good to hear you on again, Jason. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Well, first of all, I have to congratulate you on your wedding.
Thank you very much,
and there's a wedding crepe waiting for you.
So I look forward to a wedding crepe by the London Palladium. Is that where Evita's playing, the London Palladium?
Yeah, it is. I went and saw it the other night, Evita, as well. It's fantastic.
Okay, so, we're talking about a desperately, desperately grave story, so let's just lift the mood for a moment. This idea where she sings at the balcony, does that make the show, or does that actually draw back from, take away from the show?
I've watched that every night since it started in June, right? And I can tell you every word, I can tell you when there's going to be an applause and everything. But having seen it from inside, it's absolutely incredible. I've never seen anything quite as technical. It's so technically advanced. It's amazing. I didn't realise how much goes into that. I just thought she went out whilst everyone's eating an ice cream and she's out there screaming her lungs out on the balcony.
Right, I will see you. I'm coming to see it in a couple of weeks. I'll make sure I pop by. Now, to far more important matters and very desperately distressing matters. Do you agree with me? The IDF have to have an independent investigation now.
Look, my initial thoughts are I'd like to hear what comes out of Israel. So what they come out and say, if it's plausible, believable, and they can show us some facts about what actually happened, then maybe we accept that. But if they've got nothing to hide, then they should have an independent people go in and see them and investigate it.
The double tap is the worry, as it's called. I don't really know what that means, but obviously it's one missile followed by another. That is a huge cause of concern in that they're either getting their intelligence gravely wrong, or, and I hate to say this, there is intent, Jason.
Well, I want to pray that there was no intent.
You and I both.
I want to understand that in war there are always immense casualties, there are always immense mistakes. And Israel, as sophisticated as they are, I'm sure they are capable of making mistakes. But I just want to see, more pressure on Hamas calling it a day and saying, we just can't win this and let's just finish this now. And then you've got Trump saying he got all the hostages out. Well, that's not true.
No, I heard that.
And how stupid is this man? I mean, what does he believe all the hostages are out now?
And the trouble is, he's surrounded by people who nod vigorously at everything he says, otherwise they lose their jobs. Jason, see you in a couple of weeks. Good to hear from you. And I'm glad you enjoyed your show. Thank you. 7:23. Russell in, where are you? Kingston, you're on the radio, Russell. Good morning.
Hi, good morning there, Nick.
Morning.
And again, just want to reiterate the congratulations on your recent nuptials.
That's lovely, thank you. We might have to draw a line over this, but I'm very grateful and Claire is grateful too. So on we go, sir. Yeah. Thank you.
On we go. So first of all, that doctor you had on recently,
I mean,
I wouldn't want to be trained by somebody who has such limited eyesight that he can't see dozens of Jewish hostages.
I don't want to fall out with you because you were so kind to me. Hang on. A, he's not here to defend himself. B, he is a surgeon. C, because he doesn't necessarily see the conflict in the same fashion that you do, I don't know that we can say that it makes him short-sighted.
What I was referring to, Nick, it's referring to the fact that he failed to see Hamas terrorists parade and march Jewish hostages through the hospital. Multiple hostages who've been released have mentioned that they were held at Nasser Hospital to begin with.
But Russell, does that excuse killing 20 innocent people?
Well, are they innocent? Because,
there is no doubt, and I will appreciate, of the 184 journalists who've been killed since this latest outbreak of the conflict, 184, I remind you, 63 in the entire Vietnam War. Of those 184, will some be masquerading? Yes, they will have done. These five are all accredited journalists working for organisations such as AP. Associated Press.
One of those five, Mohammed Salma, videoed himself invading Israel on October 7th on his GoPro. That's video evidence. There's no ambiguity about it. He was there, part of that invasion.
Do you not feel uncomfortable that medical students have been killed by bedsides?
Pardon?
Do you not feel uncomfortable that medical students have lost their lives?
I feel uncomfortable that medical students and patients and innocent people have lost their lives. But if Nasser Hospital, which is known to be
a hospital
where Hamas terrorists are, if they're going to be there, then yes, Israel has the absolute right to target them.
And to kill medical students.
Killed.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say, look, I respect your view. I think you're wrong. Let's agree to disagree and disagree to part, as the song goes. Thank you for your kind words about my recent event. I take on board what you say. I will, you know, say I think you're wrong. But Russell, that's what a conversation is all about. 7:26, let's come home. And a record number of arrests at Notting Hill Carnival. But fortunately, it would appear, at least on the level of serious violence, it's a better year than previous. LBC's Shivani Sharma joins us from Notting Hill in West London. Shivani.
Nick, good morning. Shops which were boarded up over the weekend are currently being reopened. The floors have been scrubbed. Water's being sprayed across the area. And there's a couple of police cars still parked along side roads now. But over the bank holiday weekend, it was an entirely different picture. Streets here were bursting with colour, music, costumes and dancing as 2 million people descended onto these streets for the annual Notting Hill Carnival. But the police have also confirmed this year they've made 423 arrests across the weekend, 46 of which were for an offensive weapon. Now, there are also two non-fatal stabbings, but as you say, there's been an overall decrease in serious violence. Now, the former chief superintendent in the Met Police, Dr. Victor Alissa, has suggested that this is due to the force's use of tactics like live facial recognition and metal detectors.
Taking proactive action, targeting those people who are likely to commit those offences of violence can pay dividends. Police have worked, use a combination of tactics, stop and search, knife arches, and also working with the organisers. So you've got the organisers putting out messages days and weeks beforehand to remind people what the carnival's about.
Now, we know there have been concerns raised about the location of the carnival and about safety measures, not just this year, but in previous years too, by the likes of the Conservative leader of the London Assembly, Susan Hall, who spoke to LBC earlier this month.
The thing is this, it's an extremely good event. People enjoy it, but it's in a very, very narrow roaded place. Last year, we saw 2 people murdered. We saw 7 people stabbed. Police are getting injured more and more and more every single year. Rival gangs go there. One of the suggestions is that it's ticketed. Whatever happens, we've got to do something. It's a public event. I do not know how the mayor can stand by knowing that the police have said that they are very concerned about people's safety.
Now, I've just spoken to some people who live in this area, some of whom went to the carnival over the weekend, and they say that for them, they feel overall it's a more positive than negative experience.
I see it on my road. I live on Kensington Park Road. You see little kids sitting there eating jerk chicken. You see someone eating a bit of Italian. That's the colour, what I like to see. Instead of concentrating on this, oh, the arches, and, you know, obviously you're going to have some idiots. For peace, show the good side instead of showing this negative side.
It has a big impact for the black community, I would say. It could be overwhelming for those that live in the area, but again, there are a lot of people also that benefit from it if they use it to their advantage.
Now, the chair of the carnival is appealing for more funding for future years, but the debate over its safety and suitability rumbles on.
Shivani Sharma reporting. Let's just take the next call. We'll do it the other side of the news, Louise, if you can hold, give you a run at it. But let's just do a little bit of the social media. Ayaz says, the IDF are using brazen tactics like the shoplifters and thieves in the UK. The authorities in the UK have lost control over the shoplifters as the international community have lost control of a member state like Israel. Ayaz goes on, let me make it clear, Hamas are a despicable organisation. They should be assigned to the history books. Same subject, this from Hanan. More lies from Israel. If they do not intend to deliberately target journalists, why have more journalists been killed in Gaza in 22 months than in the whole world in the last 3 years? We will stay with that conversation. Also, later in this hour, you'll be hearing from a housing minister. He's keen to tell us how the paths have been cleared for almost 100,000 new homes, but there is a bit of a worry on the horizon there in that his boss and indeed the Deputy Prime Minister has now revealed to have three homes. Richard Holden, Conservative MP.
I think there is some questions around a hypocrisy at the moment when it seems to be that she's changing some of the rules and the government are changing a lot of the rules and potentially also in the autumn budget some of the tax measures around second home ownership.
We'll have more on that in this hour. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. Newstime, Thomas Watts.
The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, says he is horrified by Israel's double strike on a hospital in Gaza. At least 20 people, including five journalists, were killed in the attack on a building in Khan Yunis yesterday. It's reported more than 100 asylum seekers have now been detained as part of a returns deal with France. But Nigel Farage, who will set out reforms illegal migration policy later, has warned the treaty is unworkable. Investigators are working to establish the cause of a helicopter crash during a flying lesson on the Isle of Wight. Three people died when the aircraft came down yesterday morning. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees.
Coming up this week on LBC, Penny Mordaunt.
That we want to demonstrate to people who might be partners in the future that we can be trusted, that they can work with us in this way.
Emily Thornberry.
Zelensky doesn't trust Putin. And there are times when you wonder just how much Trump trusts Putin and seems to be quite naive about it.
James Cleverly.
It didn't have to be like this. We were closing asylum hotels. We had a series of plans.
Ed Davey.
I'm still pretty worried that Donald Trump just wants to do a deal with Vladimir Putin, and that comes first rather than the interest of Ukraine.
4 days, four voices. Starts today from 10 a.m. only on LBC.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order. An easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, coming back to our conversation about the tragedy that played out in that hospital and the idea there does need to be some form of independent investigation. What was it we heard from the former IDF? Relevant mechanisms within the IDF are used. I don't think really there's much faith in those. Let's get into the world of finance, joined by Christian May, who's editor-in-chief at City AM. And we cross the Atlantic and another war of words involving President Trump. Who's he angry with now, Christian? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yeah, Donald Trump, as we've often discussed, has got a real bee in his bonnet about the head of the US Central Bank, Jerome Powell, who's constantly threatening to fire him. He's very disappointed with the Central Bank in America not cutting interest rates. He's turned his fire on the equivalent of one of the Monetary Policy Committee members, one of the they're appointed for a very long term to sit on the board of the Federal Reserve. And his fury is now turned at one of them, Lisa Cook. Now, overnight, he posted a letter that he sent out on his Truth Social platform, in which he said that investigations have concluded that she's been a bit dodgy on some mortgage applications in the past, some details around her primary residence. And he's concluded, or he says that investigators have concluded, that this is a gross financial impropriety and he's left with no choice but to sack her. Now, in response, she said, "You can't sack me. You have no constitutional authority and I'm not going anywhere." And he said, "We'll see about that." So that tees up another legal battle. It is another front opening up in Trump's war against the central bank establishment, as he might call them, over in America.
Let's stay with big figures over in America. Elon Musk. What's the latest headline surrounding him, Christian?
Well, you can take your pick, can't you? let's not talk about the rocket launch that didn't launch.
Yes.
Wrong kind of clouds, I gather. Nevertheless, that gives him more time to indulge in his feud with in the world of AI. Elon Musk is very proud of Grok, which is his AI baby. I'm told it's pretty good. If you just look at his social media platform, it seems it's largely used by him and others to create avatars of sort of cartoony women and girls. I'm sure there are wider uses for it. Nevertheless, that's what he seems to be spending his time on. But he is furious with OpenAI. I have to remember that he co-founded OpenAI with Sam Altman before they had a big falling out. And they've been falling out ever since, deeper and deeper. Elon Musk has now accused Apple of anti-competitive behavior, colluding with ChatGPT, OpenAI's platform, promoting it in the Apple App Store above the likes of Elon Musk's Grok platform. He's launched a lawsuit, one of many that are being thrown around. It does remind us quite how intense this feud is and also quite how high the stakes are. I mean, we are talking now about the biggest players in the biggest sort of tech wave going. Elon Musk, not happy with Apple, not happy with OpenAI. That is another legal battle which is going to run and run.
Stakes are high in the US. Inflation's high back here in the UK. Give the details, Christian.
It is food prices. We've got the latest information from the British Retail Consortium on their shop price monitor. Food prices have risen at the fastest pace for 18 months, particularly driven by a surge in the price of butter, eggs, chocolate. Concerns from the agricultural sector that the harvest has been so poor this year because of the weather, that's going to put further pressure on food prices. It's a real blow for shoppers, families, and particularly for retailers. One of the reasons, in addition to a poor harvest that people are talking about, food price inflation continuing to climb is because of the cost pressures that they've had to absorb, many, many billions of pounds worth of additional cost pressures. And it comes just after some of the 60 biggest retailers, including Tesco, Boots and Sainsbury's, wrote to the Chancellor last week and said, "Do not touch us again in your upcoming budget, because this is a sector that cannot afford to bear any further costs."
And let's finish with the idea of the boss of a major British company talking to the business secretary about the concern. Again, we go across the Atlantic, US tariffs.
Yes, that's right. The UK was very pleased with the deal it struck on tariffs with Donald Trump, but they were blindsided last week after the US administration got into the details and imposed a wave of new tariffs of up to 25% on particular categories, up to 400 categories of British manufactured goods. That includes diggers. And that leads us to JCB, poster child for that sort of equipment.
Yep.
They export about £2 billion worth of those heavy goods to the US, now coming under this sort of latest unexpected range of tariffs from the US. Now, the chief executive, Graham McDonald, of JCB, that powerhouse company, is leading the charge against this, and good on him. He says that they are simply not going to fulfil their orders until they have clarity on what this means. And they are leading the conversations with the business secretary, Jonathan Reynolds. And I'm sure that Jonathan Reynolds is going to want to listen very carefully to what JCB and others have to say. I believe that meeting is taking place tomorrow.
Good to hear from you. Thanks, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Taking us to almost 7:40, back to our conversation concerning this tragic bombing, double bombing, one has to say, or double tap, as it's called in military circles, I understand, of the hospital in Gaza. Louise is in shots. Thank you for hanging on the line. Louise, your point. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Thanks for taking my call.
Not at all.
The reason why I've called in is I was listening to your previous contributor before the break, and again, I didn't
Russell,
read the whole...
I think, yes.
Yep, and it was basically alluding to the fact that the reason why the IDF targeted the hospital was the fact that Hamas, who are a terrible terrorist group, were parading the hostages through the hospital, right? So why on earth then, if the IDF knew, or the Israeli government knew where the hostages were, rather than go and kind of try and save them, they decided to bomb the hospital instead?
I don't know. I think you're trying to, as we do, we're trying to apply rationality to a situation where at times both sides act in the most utterly irrational fashion, Louise. Isn't that the reality?
Well, if I was the parents of any of those hostages, I would be absolutely raging with the Israeli government and the IDF for the actions that they've taken. And then just a really quick point upon the journalists as well.
Yeah.
I thought, like, journalists weren't allowed in, you know, the conflict zone. So the fact that, the Israeli government are trying to portray the journalists who managed to get there as, like, Hamas terrorists as well. I mean, it is almost like Donald Trump levels of delusion. I mean, I don't know who they're trying to convince.
Enjoyed our conversation, Louise, and thank you for hanging on the line. It's 184 journalists have been killed since the start of the war. To give you context, 63 were lost in the entire Vietnam conflict. But I am happy... I will accept that of those 184, I will accept not all of them will have been legitimate journalists. But it is ludicrous to suggest that all of them are operating under the shield of Hamas. More calls on that in a moment. But let's come back to matters at home. And supposedly for a government that was all about growth, well, in one sector it's going completely the other way and at some considerable speed. Leaders in the hospitality sector has said more than half of UK's job losses since the last budget have come from their particular area. Losses and job losses in restaurants, bars, pubs and hotels. 89,000 since last October. This is according to analysis of ONS data, that's the Office for National Statistics data, by UK Hospitality. And we can now speak to Alan Simpson, who is CEO of UK Hospitality, joining me now. How did you and your colleagues drill through the numbers? How did you get to these figures? Good morning.
Well, it's fairly simple math. You just take the ONS figures, take the total, find out how much hospitality is and subtract it. And as you say, it's more than half. Retail, of course, very affected as well. And it speaks to a broader point that we started making when the budget hit last year, that we are, as a sector, are struggling more than almost any other because the budget was so hard on anybody that employs...
But why, Mr. Simpson? What was it within the budget that particularly went after the sector you act for?
Well, it was particularly the change to national insurance contributions. So this gets fairly niche quite quickly. But of course, we all pay national insurance contributions. We know so do our employers. But the way that the change was made last year wasn't just about increasing the level of national insurance. They reduced the amount of salary you can earn before you pay it. So clearly, if you're working 2 days a week, you're a weekend worker in a pub or a restaurant, you saw that a significantly larger amount of your wages came into national insurance contributions than if you're a full-time worker in a bank or in a law firm.
How nervous are you about the autumn budget? Or, the other way of looking at that, what would you like to see introduced?
Well, look, let's... Well,
That was a real puff.
It was a puff, and you can have more of those. It's feeling puffy at the moment. If you... Let's start with the problem statement. So 89,000 jobs lost in hospitality alone since last year's budget. It'll absolutely be 100,000 by the time the Chancellor gives this year's budget. Fine. What do I think will happen? I hope and expect that the Chancellor understands that the reality is you cannot afford to take any more from this sector this year's budget. But we have been very clear about what we need to see. We need to see VAT adjusted for hospitality. In the rest of Europe, hospitality has a discount on VAT. We need CNICs fixed, and we need business rates fixed too. Because otherwise, I think we'll quite quickly be at 200,000 job losses in the sector alone, let alone the rest of the economy. Now, of course, we haven't talked about the cost of food inflation, as Christian, your last caller did. You know, the wider costs that the sector is operating in are only going up as well.
Grateful for your time. Good luck with the sector you act for. Alan Simpson, CEO of UK Hospitality. 89,000 jobs and a government that was all about growth. They've so many questions to answer, don't they? Matthew's in Harrogate, coming back to what happened in the Middle East. Matthew, your view, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you today?
I'm all right, sir. What are you going to tell me, Gov?
I'm an ex-soldier. I was infantry for a period of time, 10 years, and in three tours of duty in Northern Ireland through the 90s, starting from the early 90s to the end. And seeing how Israel is carrying out these attacks in Gaza sickens me.
Right.
And I do not understand how anybody can accept the way they're acting. Now, I when serving for the British Army in Northern Ireland, my hands were tied a lot of the time by rules of engagement that protected the public. And even if I was being shot at and there were civilians behind the shooter, I wasn't allowed to open fire. So to see the way that these guys are acting, I can't get my head around it. I cannot, and I can't understand anybody who can say it's acceptable just because if they're using human shields, then you should wait until you have an opportunity where you're not killing innocent civilians.
As a man who's been brave enough, as a man who's been brave enough to serve his country, though, how are they to get? They would argue, how are they to get the hostages back, and how are they to defeat Hamas? Is how they would argue, Matthew.
The same way that we dealt with the provisional IRA in Northern Ireland. You put boots on the ground, you work hearts and mind, you don't carpet bomb an area, and you don't kill innocent people, because all they're doing is creating more people for the so-called enemy, or their enemy, Hamas.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for your input, Matthew. I can tell you're driving. Have a safe day. Coming up later in the show, the idea of mass deportations. It will be outlined by Reform UK leader Nigel Farage later today. Here he is speaking about an associated issue on the weekend.
Ask yourself a question. Whose side is this government on? Is it on your side, or is it on the side of young, undocumented males coming into Britain?
And more on that later in the show. Just turned 7:46, LBC News. Headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
The Foreign Secretary's joined international condemnation of Israel's double strike on a hospital in Gaza. The Home Office is reportedly preparing to return about 100 migrants to France as part of a new one-in-one-out deal. And police say this year's Notting Hill Carnival had far fewer incidents of serious violence than in recent years. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There's only one lane open on the M25 anti-clockwise at Junction 25 at the A10 because a lorry was on fire earlier. There are delays from Junction 27 at the M11, but all the surrounding routes are extremely congested. Also on the M25, it's very slow clockwise from Junction 5 at the M26, 6 at Godston, where a car has broken down, and two lanes remain closed. Huge delays on the M1 northbound. So if you're heading to Luton Airport, do allow yourself extra time. A lorry has overturned just after the exit for the airport, which is Junction 10, and there are queues from before Junction 9 at Redbourne. On the Underground, the Victoria Line suspended again. No service from Brixton to Victoria.
LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Ah, train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep, we're that family now.
Josh, flippers off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Paddy, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Ah, seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Phil, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry. Terms and conditions apply at gambleaware.org.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes for eight. We'll try and come back to our conversation about the Middle East. Reza, I know you've called and I will try and get you, but we can go to domestic matters. And it would appear celebrate some good news. The government's saying they've been able to speed up the building of almost 100,000 homes across England as they seek to hit that 1.5 million target, a target I've discussed on a number of occasions with the Labour MP and one of the relevant men behind this, Housing and Planning Minister Matthew Pennycook, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Minister. Let's get a little more detail then. How have you been able to bulldoze this through, as it were? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Always a pleasure. Well, as you know, one of the quickest ways to boost housing supply is to target those large-scale developments across the country which already have planning permission, but which for various reasons have stalled or are simply not building out as fast as they could be, and to provide them with the necessary support. And unlocking and accelerating house building on such sites is precisely what our new Homes Accelerator has been doing over the past 12 months. As you rightly say, as a result of the support provided by government and our housing and regeneration agency, Homes England, we're able to accelerate and expedite the delivery of homes on almost 100,000 units across different sites across the country. And this morning we're adding six new sites to that targeted support in Guildford, Aylesbury, Somerset, Wigan and two London boroughs, which we estimate will unlock a further 12,000 homes for both for sale and for rent, and make another contribution to that ambitious plan for change target of building 1.5 million new homes in this parliament.
And the London boroughs are Redbridge and Haringey. So where are you? You're a little over a year in office. What number are we looking at for year one, would you say, Minister?
We don't have a net additional dwellings figure for year one. I think I've given you the latest figure we have on previous occasions, Nick. In 2023-24, 221,000, just over 221,000 homes were built. Been very clear about the fact that is not good enough. That's not where that we need to be over the course of the parliament. But it's all expected, Nick. You will know, as a result of decisions made by the previous Conservative government, including the abolition of mandatory housing targets, that we inherited record low planning permission. So, of course, that's going to feed through into the number of homes started and completed. But we are starting to turn things around as a result of the changes we're making to the planning system, as a result of the significant investment we're making in land, infrastructure and social and affordable housing. And some green shoots are starting to come through. I'll give you a couple of examples. The amount of development land coming onto the market is at its highest level since 2017. The planning application data we have for the first quarter of this year is 6% up from a year ago. ONS output data says private house building is up 5.7%. And you'll know the Office for Budget Responsibility estimate that as a result purely of those changes we made to the National Planning Policy Framework, that house building will reach its highest levels for 40 years. So lots more to do, lots more to do to meet that stretching target over the whole course of the Parliament, but we're turning the corner and getting Britain building again.
You know what question is going to come now. With all the work you and your colleagues are doing, how appropriate is it that the senior member of this government, indeed I understand your immediate boss, has three separate dwellings, Minister?
Well, obviously the pressures on the Angela as Deputy Prime Minister are unique. She has different residencies across the country.
Why does she need three?
But, Nick, are we saying that people can't purchase second homes? The government's position on this matter is very clear. We're not opposed to people owning second homes. What we have been very clear about is that excessive concentrations of short-term lets and second homes can put pressure on communities, and that's why we're giving councils a range of tools to be able to manage the problem. And that includes the council tax premium introduced by the previous government. And in the case of the Deputy Prime Minister's residence in Brighton, that council has taken use of that, and the Deputy Prime Minister will pay it in full.
As someone who you and I have spoken on a number of occasions, and I enjoy our conversations, you can put your hand on your heart and say, this doesn't look have a bad look to you.
I don't think there is a story here in any sense,
Good Lord.
Other than the fact that Angela Rayner clearly lives rent-free in the heads of the shadow cabinet. Deputy Prime Minister's primary residence for council tax purposes is in her constituency, which she obviously visits to undertake her duties as a Member of Parliament. She pays the council tax on that property. She has a second home in Brighton and Hove. She complies with the council tax premium that council have introduced. Tell me what the story is here.
Well, who pays... I'm happy to, sir. Who pays the council tax on her grace and favour home in central London?
The accommodation Admiralty House in central London. The council tax obligations there are discharged by the Cabinet Office, Westminster Council, as has been the case...
So that is her second home?
That's her home she uses for work purposes.
So the £2,034 a year is paid by us, the taxpayers?
And has been under successive governments, Nick. There is accommodation available in London for senior government ministers.
And that will go to £4,068 by policies initially considered by the Conservatives, but brought in by this very... a housing secretary. That will double. So my listeners, the good folk of Greenwich and Woolwich, will be paying more because of policies that this woman has championed.
Now, let's be very clear about the council tax premium. Let's be clear about the council tax premium. As you rightly identify, it was a policy introduced by the previous Conservative government.
Yes.
It's discretionary. It's for local authorities to adopt it if they wish. And where they do so, obviously people who own second homes have to pay it in full. The arrangements for Admiralty House, has been the case under successive governments, are that those council tax obligations are discharged by the government, by the Cabinet Office and Westminster Council, because senior government ministers obviously need access to accommodation in London to facilitate their work.
Right. And you're not accepting that this is a bad look, or indeed, as the Conservatives are suggesting, it's a case of staggering hypocrisy. For a Deputy Prime Minister to push these principles forward and have three homes. You'll remember, you would have been at school, but two Jags Prescott. We now have three homes Rayner, don't we, Minister?
No, but I don't accept that, Nick, because I don't understand what the charge is in terms of hypocrisy. We have allowed councils to introduce a council tax premium if they want to use it to manage excessive concentrations of second homes and short-term lets in their areas. Brighton and Hove have made use of that, The Deputy Prime Minister will pay it in full. But what we're not saying is that no one can own a second home across the country. And I think, hopefully, you'd agree with that. And I think most of your fair-minded viewers would agree with it, too.
Some would say that your position puts you a little bit out of touch in this area. Let's move to something else. When Lord Blunkett, formerly David Blunkett, the Home Secretary, says as regards Labour policies on stopping small boat crossings, there is no comprehensive answer or an understandable narrative on illegal immigration. And that's Lord Blunkett. How do you react?
Well, I've got a huge amount of respect for David. Labour ministers will always listen to what he has to say, but I respectfully disagree with him on this point. The government has gripped this issue. It does have a comprehensive strategy. If you look at the suggestions Lord Blunkett made in that interview to streamline the appeals process, we've committed to doing so, to look at reform of the ECHR. We're taking forward the implementation of the ECHR domestically in terms of reform, looking at Article 8 where it's being abused unnecessarily, unhelpfully, and taking forward the conversation in Europe, it should also be said, about more fundamental reform of the Convention. The Justice Secretary was at the Council of Europe in June making the case for doing so. So we're addressing the specific points Lord Blunkett said, but in terms of the charge that we haven't got a grip on this issue, I would disagree. But it was never going to be an overnight fix, but the range of measures we're taking from this groundbreaking pilot scheme with France for returns. The
when will we actually see that, Minister?
Well,
I mean, at the moment, the ratio is one out, 18 in.
Well,
I know his speciality was law, but presumably he did get a maths O-level, did he, Sakir?
But, Nick, you will know this is a pilot scheme. We're getting it up and running, but we are making progress. The first asylum seekers under that scheme have been detained. We will see removals to France in the coming weeks. But it is not the only part of our strategy. There are many other parts, several of which are not in force, as you're aware. The Borders Bill is still going through Parliament. The French authorities are still reviewing their laws to take more proactive enforcement work in shallow water. So it's all coming through. It won't be overnight.
Indeed.
But it is starting to make tangible progress. Evidenced by the fact, I have to say, Nick, and I always come back to this, that we have deported over 35,000 people with no right to be there. There's a significant increase in the rate of those decisions.
But how many of those had arrived by small boats, Minister?
Of the 35,000?
Mm.
I don't have that number to hand, Nick.
Wouldn't that be fairly relevant?
Well, the people with no right to be...
I put it to you that it's pitifully small of that 35, very small percentage.
Well, it's a 12% increase on the previous year.
Yes, but
it's
we don't know
far,
how many
small boats
rate. Lastly,
There will be, Nick, and I think this is an important point for your viewers.
Yeah.
Some of the claims coming through in the asylum system will be from other routes other than small business. We're seeing, for example, just to give your listeners a very specific example, more people who were issued student visas in the previous parliament applying for asylum as those visas come close to expiry. But again, we're taking steps to clamp down on that, putting tighter requirements on the sponsoring academic institutions in place.
All right. Lastly, if you've mentioned numbers, you'll probably be aware of a poll this morning by the Times newspaper. 71% of respondents believe the Prime Minister is handling the issue of asylum hotels badly. 56% of that 71% are Labour voters. This is Reform UK enjoys a 22% poll lead. The policies aren't working in the minds of the voters, are they?
Well, I appreciate that the voters want to see progress. They're impatient for faster progress. We recognise that. We appreciate that. I want to see, for example, hotel use reduced very quickly. I share the concerns of residents in communities across the country about the use of these expensive hotels. But we have got to reduce the use of hotels in a planned and orderly way so that we don't put undue pressures on communities. But we'll be judged, Nick, at the next election, as you know, at which point we will have reduced net migration. We will have brought the number of hotels down to zero. That's our commitment in this parliament, as well as building, we haven't gone to it in any sufficient detail, many, many more houses.
But let's finish with these 100,000 homes that have been moved in the first year of operation. Congratulations to you and your colleagues on that, and thank you for your candour. Housing and Planning Minister Matthew Pennycook appearing here on LBC, taking us to 8 o'clock for their news headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, about 100 asylum seekers are now believed to be in detention as part of a new returns deal with France. They could be sent back across the English Channel within weeks as ministers face mounting pressure to cut small boat arrivals. The Reform UK leader Nigel Farage will set out his plan to tackle the issue later. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reports.
The Reform Party leader is expected today to lay out more details of his immigration plans, including how he would organise the mass deportations of all foreign criminals by putting a duty on the Home Secretary to remove people. And anyone coming to the UK on a small boat would be banned from claiming asylum. He will also accuse the Prime Minister of being on the side of human rights lawyers rather than the British people. Labour say the policy is written on the back of a fag packet, and the Tories say Reform are just copying their old ideas.
Reuters and the Associated Press have demanded a clear explanation from Israel over a deadly airstrike in Gaza. Five journalists were among at least 20 people killed in the so-called double tap strike in Khan Yunis yesterday. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says it was a tragic mishap. A junior minister has defended Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. The property in Hove is in addition to the Housing Secretary's constituency home in Greater Manchester. Ms. Rayner also has access to a grace and favour flat in central London. The Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook, has rejected Conservative claims of hypocrisy.
Well, obviously the pressures on the Angela as Deputy Prime Minister are unique. She has different residencies across the country.
Why does she need three?
But Nick, are we saying that people can't purchase second homes? The government's position on this matter is very clear. We're not opposed to people owning second homes.
The Metropolitan Police says this year's Notting Hill Carnival was a safer event for all. Officers made 423 arrests over the two main days, on top of dozens of preemptive arrests in the days leading up to the event. There were two stabbings, neither of which resulted in life-threatening injuries. Accident investigators are on the Isle of Wight to establish the cause of a helicopter crash. Three people died and a fourth remains in hospital after the aircraft came down during a flying lesson yesterday morning. A campaign encouraging people to use headphones when playing music or taking calls on public transport is being rolled out in London. Posters will begin appearing on the Elizabeth line today ahead of a wider rollout on the Tube and buses. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 93.21. It closed up 12 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and the euro 15. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after eight on Tuesday, August the 26th. A plan for mass deportations. It'll be put forward later today by Reform UK leader Nigel Farage as a poll shows public, and many of whom, by the way, are Labour voters, rounding out of any patience with this government's attempts. In other news, a story of rank hypocrisy or nothing to see here. Angela Three Homes Rayner. Housing Minister Matthew Pennycook defended her just minutes ago.
I don't think there is a story here in any sense.
Good Lord.
Other than the fact that Angela Rayner clearly lives rent-free in the heads of the shadow cabinet.
I do enjoy being told by politicians there's no story, because I don't know how I've managed to survive in this business for the few years that I have.
Great concern in the hospitality sector. Jobs lost in their tens of thousands. Mark Wrigley, he runs the Atlas Bar in Manchester. He said it's incredibly difficult to work in the industry.
A lot of sleepless nights for a lot of people. We probably generate £300,000 or £400,000 for the government, this one business, and yet I get nothing from it.
So a government that was determined to bring us growth, you'll be looking at 100,000 job losses by the time they come up with their latest budget. And in other news, the report that says the number of children sent home from school due to racist behaviour or language has soared to an all-time record level. But some of them are four-year-olds. I say again, I'm sure he, she could say the word, but can you be racist at four? Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson had this to say.
It's completely unacceptable if we're seeing that level of racism within our schools, but I do support schools in taking action where it does happen, because it is important.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Now, I don't want to blitz you with too many numbers, but if you were listening just now when I was speaking with the housing minister, this poll done by the Times newspaper, 71% of respondents believe Sir Keir Starmer is handling the issue of asylum and asylum hotels badly. 56% of those, remember, are Labour voters. No surprise then that Nigel Farage's Reform UK has enjoying a 22 percentage point lead. Let's get to LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Now, I need to explain, she's heading up to Oxford ahead of that Nigel Farage press conference, but she's on the sort of journalist team bus. So if we lose the signal as they go under a tunnel, there's not a lot we can do, but off we go. Let's go then to the party bus. Natasha Clark, good morning.
Morning from the party bus, Nick. Yes, it's the week before politicians go back to Parliament, but there is no such summer break for Nigel Farage. The Reform Party leader is expected today to lay out more details of his immigration plans. And like you just said, he'll be appearing in Oxford later today, telling us how he will organise mass deportations of all foreign criminals if Reform wins the next election. His plan is going to be to put a duty on the Home Secretary to remove people and ban anybody who comes to the UK on a small boat from ever being able to claim asylum. Farage has said there would be a six-month window for people to return voluntarily. His government would give them $2,500 for doing so and pay for the cost of their flight. The party also says it will develop a deportation app so that migrants can self-deport. Speaking last week, the Reform boss said he thinks that Keir Starmer is prioritising asylum seekers over the British people.
We will appoint, we will demand, this government does the same, that there is a minister for deportations. You've only got to go back 20 years to the last Labour government, and they were deporting tens of thousands of people a year who were here illegally. When Blunkett was Home Secretary, if you came illegally, you know, you didn't touch the sides. You were sent back. So what I'm calling for isn't actually anything particularly radical. It's actually just common sense.
But Nick, you just spoke in the last few minutes to the Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook. He has been defending the Labour government's handling of the immigration crisis so far.
Nick, you will know this is a pilot scheme. We're getting it up and running, but we are making progress. The first asylum seekers under that scheme have been detained. We will see removals to France in the coming weeks. But it is not the only part of our strategy. There are many other parts, several of which are not in force, as you're aware. The Borders Bill is still going through Parliament. The French authorities are still reviewing their laws to take more proactive enforcement work in shallow waters. So it's all coming through. It won't be overnight.
Indeed.
But it is starting to make tangible progress. Evidenced by the fact, I have to say, Nick, and I always come back to this, that we have deported over 35,000 people with no right to be there. There's a significant increase in the rate of those decisions.
Writing in the Daily Telegraph today, Nick, Mr. Farage says that he would also prioritise British citizens first with a new British Bill of Rights. He also said he would withdraw from the European Convention on Human Rights. But if this sounds quite familiar, Nick, well, it is. It is very similar to some of the measures that the Tories tried to introduce in their final years in power. And ultimately, that did not stop the boats either. And like you said at the top, the issue is, of course, incredibly urgent for Keir Starmer. Nearly 28,000 people have crossed the Channel so far this year. And the issue for many people on the streets is still very urgent. It soared up the YouGov tracker. Some polls have it as the top issue facing the country. Now, Labour this morning say that this policy is written on the back of a fad packet. They have revealed their own one-in, one-out deal with France, which is expected to start any day now. But the numbers still going up. The Tory party, on the other hand, say that this Reform Party idea is just copying their old ideas and that they don't have a proper plan.
LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, safe journey up to Oxford. Let's turn to former political editor at The Sun, broadcaster, columnist, journalist Trevor Kavanagh, a former colleague of mine. Trevor, when I read that we're talking about a government that's still got a majority of 150-plus, but a number of unnamed Labour MPs are telling the Prime Minister, get this right or we're going to lose at the next general election. You've seen more elections than many. Would you agree with that? Morning, Trevor.
Good morning, Nick. I would agree. In fact, I would think that when Natasha said that if Nigel Farage wins the next election, she could easily have said when he wins the next election. Really? I think that everything has changed in the last few weeks with the Epping Hotel protests. And suddenly the public, the long-suffering silent majority, has a focus for something which has been angering them for years, and suddenly it's come alive and they are united and they have something to rally around, wave the flag over and actually stand in the streets and say their piece. And I think that this is a death sentence for the Starmer government. It isn't necessarily a lifesaver for the Tories, but I think that Nigel Farage has seized the moment.
Trevor, how much is the Prime Minister trapped by his legal mindset?
He's trapped by everything that he's ever stood for in his entire political life. And frankly, I think that he's one foot nailed to the floor and he's running around in circles, because most of the party that is now saying that he must act, those members of the cabinet who say that something must be done, are the very same people who have stopped anything being done, not just by this government, but by the Tories when they were in office, when they were trying to do something themselves. They are literally hoist by their own petard. And in fact, and Starmer and Lord Hermer, the Attorney General, both of them human rights lawyers, will do nothing that contravenes their belief in international law rather than political and parliamentary decision-making.
Finally, as someone who's written some of the best political scoops that we've ever seen, I was told earlier this morning that the story about Angela Rayner having three homes, I was told by one of her colleagues, the Housing Minister, Matthew Penny, that I'm wrong. This is not a story. Trevor Kavanagh, do you think it's a story?
It wouldn't be a story for anyone else but Angela Rayner. Angela Rayner is the greatest hypocrite that ever fought the Labour Party. And what you have here is someone who says one thing and actually legislates on one thing, which is to make life difficult for second property owners while swanning around in the sea outside her luxurious apartment in Hove overlooking that the channel. And I think that... you know, it is just literally nothing's too good for the working classes, as long as it's Angela Rayner. And, you know, do as I say, not as I do. It just rankles. And nobody would really care too much about someone having a second home, but it's Angela Rayner.
Always enjoy speaking to you. Trevor, thank you. Trevor Kavanagh, a former political editor and columnist for the Sun newspaper, 13 after 8. Listening to that, Rehana Popal, who's a barrister specialising in immigration and public law. If I may call you Rehana, I hope that's too forward. When you see headlines with the words mass deportations, as a profession in the field, how do you react? Good morning.
Good morning. Very frustrated. I think people don't quite realise how many people are truly being deported and how the system currently works. I think these are just grabbing headlines on just that, to be honest with you.
But we hear, and indeed the same minister I was just referencing earlier told me 35,000 have been deported. But we don't know the percent. How many of those are these what are called small boat arrivals, Rehana?
The difficulty is that under the previous administration, there was a huge halt of people being processed for asylum claims whilst the Rwanda policy, as many people remember, was going through the court system. That policy was ultimately found to be unlawful. You cannot deport somebody.
Oh.
Claim later, which essentially is what, without much detail or substance, is what I'm understanding of Farage's policy at the moment. And the legality of that, I seriously question.
Lastly, I'll reference the newspaper again. The Times has the case of Clevis Disha, who came from Albania when he was 15 in 2001, using a false identity. He was granted citizenship in 2007. 10 years later, he was stripped of citizenship, faced deportation, because he'd been found in possession of drugs of £250,000, but he wasn't defended because, in part, his children were averse to foreign chicken nuggets. What does that tell you about our deportation system, Rehana?
It's going to be a bit like the deportation story that we had with the cat to Theresa May.
I did say in part.
I don't know the
details. I did say in part.
I don't know the details of what happened in that specific case. Now, it might well be that those children have much greater needs than just chicken nuggets, but without knowing the full details, it's very difficult for me to comment, unfortunately.
Enjoyed our conversation. The line dropped a little bit, so we'll probably not risk it any longer. But thank you. Rehana Popal is a barrister specialising in immigration and public law. Right, the public, have understandably lost complete and utter confidence with this government over that. The numbers are nearly 50% up on what they were last year. We hear about border forces and tackling the gangs, smashing the gangs. It is all palpable nonsense. But how happier would you be? Expressions like mass deportations, they do speak sometimes in the past of rather sinister regimes. Or are you ready to sign up? We'll take your calls on that. 16 after 8 then. LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
About 100 asylum seekers are now believed to be in detention as part of a new one-in, one-out returns deal with France. The news agencies Reuters and the Associated Press have demanded a clear explanation from Israel over an airstrike in Gaza. A housing minister has rejected claims of hypocrisy over Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 is closed anti-clockwise from junction 25 at the A10 to 24 at Porter's Bar. It's because a lorry carrying hay bales was on fire earlier and there are huge delays from junction 27 at the M11. But the surrounding routes are extremely congested, especially the A10 southbound coming down from Cheshunt. Now, also on the M25, it's very slow clockwise from junction 5 at the M26 to 6 at Godstone. It's because a car broke down earlier, has now been recovered, so all the lanes are back open, but there are still delays of about 45 minutes. Only one lane's open on the M1 northbound at junction 10 at Luton Airport. A lorry has overturned, and there are delays from junction 9 at Redbourne.
This is LBC.
Build your own package with TUI. Let's go. City break or a beach escape. Lovely. Fly from your local airport.
Taxi's here.
Handy. Any day of the week. Ideal. On a TUI flight or a partner airline.
This is your captain speaking.
Nice. How many nights? 3? 5? 14? Perfect. More options, more choice. All wrapped up with a TUI smile. TUI. Live happy. Atoll and Abtu protected. Booking T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business-ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "All Change, Please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 8, you'll hear, of course, full coverage here on LBC as Nigel Farage lays out their idea for mass deportations, obviously calling into question our continued membership of the European Convention, where that needs to go. But let's get what you want to hear. Nikki in Sherborne. Hello, Nikki. What do you think?
Hello.
You've heard a little bit about what Nigel Farage is going to say. What do you make of it?
Oh, first, congratulations.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Yep, I'm a very lucky man.
Oh, I wish I were. But anyway, okay. Yes, nobody loved me.
There's a lid for every pot. Go on you go.
Oh, now, firstly, what's Nigel Farage's proposal going to cost? And he said that he'll be able to send 5 aircraft a day.
Yep.
To where's he going to send them to? And will them countries accept them?
Well, this is, and I'm sure my colleague Natasha Clark will be, and many of the other political editors, will be exploring it, because it makes great headlines. In reality, Nikki, how enforceable is it? How doable is it?
Well, I don't think you'd be able to do it. I mean, I've thought for a while now, Nigel Farage is hoping there'll be a general election soon. Maybe this next year, especially after the budget.
Why does he want it? Because you could argue that actually, although it's his support has ticked up a couple of points over the last 12 months. I would say this government at the moment really haven't got a grip on pretty much anything. Why would he not want to see them sink deeper into the mire, Nikki, and exploit that?
Well, like I said, I think the budget's going to play a big part in it.
Yes, I agree.
Now, but that's not what I came on about, you know. Now, this business of, not allowing the hotels to be used to house migrants.
Yeah.
Now, the Defence Secretary last week, and also the gentleman you had on this morning, said 4 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that time, how many are going to cross the channel?
Yep, well...
And also, I've got a you know, I'm a suspicious person.
Yes, sir.
This business that they keep bragging about, all this new housing.
Yes.
4 years.
We'll have to see. They're off target year one, but they would say that the mechanisms that are being put in place will then expedite matters over the next just under four years. Nikki, thank you. Thanks for your kind words. Only finishing with you to get more people involved. Chris in Stockport, over to you now. Good morning. What can you tell me?
Good morning, Nick. Asylum seekers, the words are used constantly.
Yep.
How many are economic migrants? In other words, you see these boats daily rammed full of young men who are coming over.
Yep.
Nobody knows where they are, what where they come from. They could be rapists, murderers, or whatever.
Well, they could be shopkeepers and people who want to work and people who want to start industries as well. So I think we should necessarily decide that they're all major criminals.
No, I didn't say... No. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. I said they could be.
Yes.
To turn around and say they're all asylum seekers is ridiculous. Because clearly, when you look at them, they're coming on, they've got phones. They stop, but they're walking around with brand new phones. They've got brand new trainers on.
Right.
How
do you... whenever I hear these stories, I always get a little bit nervous. How do you know that the people walking around with brand new trainers are asylum seekers, Chris?
Because they stood outside the hotel, the Cresta Court in Altrincham.
Right.
That's how I know.
Okay, sir. I mean, other people are allowed to walk past hotels. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I have to be very mindful of the fact that while I understand the fury that the government's utter inability to handle this, and one has to say the previous administration as well, we are talking about, in some instances, in some vulnerable people, and in some instances, children, and we don't want this sort of extraordinary anger to spill over into any degree of danger towards individuals. Because, bear in mind, Chris, if I was living in some of the circumstances in which these people were, and I was brave enough to try and get across the channel on a rubber boat, I probably would do it. I probably would do it, Chris. So we need to be aware of that. But the anger that you want to direct should be directed at successive government's failures. Chris, thank you. We might return to that. But if we're angry about failures, let's just review this story that is, although we were told it's not a story, of course, by a government minister, about Angela Rayner and the fact that she has three homes. Now, this is the housing secretary who has continued with a conservative policy that will mean that if you have a second home, you will have your council tax doubled. And we now hear that she has three homes, three places of residence. Something I aired with one of her colleagues, the housing... Someone's got a sense of humour at number 10. Housing Minister Matthew Pennycook.
Well, Nick, are we saying that people can't purchase second homes? The government's position on this matter is very clear. We're not opposed to people owning second homes. What we have been very clear about is that excessive concentrations of short-term lets and second homes can put pressure on communities, and that's why we're giving councils a range of tools to be able to manage the problem. And that includes the council tax premium introduced by the previous government. And in the case of the Deputy Prime Minister's residence in Brighton, that council has taken use of that, and the Deputy Prime Minister will pay it in full.
As someone who you and I have spoken on a number of occasions, and I enjoy our conversations, you can put your hand on your heart and say, this doesn't have a bad look to you.
I don't think there is a story here in any sense,
Good Lord.
Other than the fact that Angela Rayner clearly lives rent-free in the heads of the shadow cabinet. Deputy Prime Minister's primary residence for council tax purposes is in her constituency, which she obviously visits to undertake her duties as a Member of Parliament. She pays the council tax on that property. She has a second home in Brighton and Hove. She complies with the council tax premium that council have introduced. Tell me what the story is here.
Well, who pays... I'm happy to, sir. Who pays the council tax on her Grace and Favour home in central London?
The accommodation Admiralty House in central London. The council tax obligations there are discharged by the Cabinet Office, Westminster Council, as has been the case...
So that is her second home?
That's her home she uses for work purposes.
So the £2,034 a year is paid by us, the taxpayers.
And has been under successive governments, Nick. There is accommodation available in London for
and
senior government ministers.
And that will go to 4,068 by policies initially considered by the Conservatives, but brought in by this very housing secretary. That will double. So my listeners, the good folk of Greenwich and Woolwich, will be paying more because of policies that this woman has championed.
Now, let's be very clear about the council tax premium. Let's be clear about the council tax premium. As you rightly identify, it was a policy introduced by the previous Conservative government.
Yes.
It's discretionary. It's for local authorities to adopt it if they wish. And where they do so, obviously people who own second homes have to pay it in full. The arrangements for Admiralty House, as has been the case under successive governments, are that those council tax obligations are discharged by the government, by the Cabinet Office and Westminster Council, because senior government ministers obviously need access to accommodation in London to facilitate their work.
Right. And you're not accepting that this is a bad look, or indeed, as the Conservatives are suggesting, it's a case of staggering hypocrisy. For a Deputy Prime Minister to push these principles forward and have three homes. You'll remember, you would have been at school, but two Jags Prescott. We now have three homes Rayner, don't we, Minister?
No, but I don't accept that, Nick, because I don't understand what the charge is in terms of hypocrisy. We have allowed councils to introduce a council tax premium if they want to use it to manage excessive concentrations of second homes and short-term lets in their areas. Brighton and Hove have made use of that, the Deputy Prime Minister will pay it in full. But what we're not saying is that no one can own a second home across the country. And I think, hopefully, you'd agree with that. And I think most of your fair-minded viewers would agree with it too.
Fair-minded viewers or even fair-minded listeners. And let's go to Bert in Tooting, one of them now. Bert, is this a story? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, Nick. Yes, that is a story, isn't it? She's legally entitled to buy multiple properties, as is anybody. But it smells of hypocrisy. This government's policy on taxation of second homes is punitive, on capital gains, on council tax. It smacks in the face of people who bought second homes a few years ago and are now paying excessive taxes that they didn't know were coming in under this government. It stinks of hypocrisy. And then on top of that, why are we paying her council tax on Admiralty House? And why does she need to live there anyway?
Well, she is Deputy Prime Minister. She has got to be fairly close to the seat of power. I get that. But it does seem the woman who is, as I'll use your word again, championing this policy, then and doubles the tax. It really is one, it's do as I say, not do as I do, is what I would say, Bert, here.
100%. And just a bit of context, we all know that a few years ago she was legally entitled to buy houses under right to buy, and she bought two council houses, so she's profited from that. So that's a nice little situation to be in, isn't it?
Well said, Bert. Thank you. I think the Minister, if you're listening, you realise this is a story. Bert, thanks. Richard in Forest Hill will be a minute late to news. Richard, on you go. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick.
Is this a story?
Yeah, it's just like you said, it's hypocrisy, but I just think the whole thing, that the way the Labour Party is going, they just seem to just want to tax everything that's moving, and I think it's just over-taxation. I mean, there's no incentive, that's what I've noticed, isn't it? Everything's a U-turn. I mean, as you said, I mean, even Keir Starmer said he was going to freeze council tax, he didn't do that.
No.
U-turned on that, and they're virtually U-turned on everything, it seems.
It is a story, thank you for that. Have a good one, Richard. Jim in Tenterden. Angela Rayner is like one of the characters from Orwell's Animal Farm. She claims she's a normal working class lass, only interested in the common man, and we should all be equal. As Orwell says, however, some of us are more equal than others. Mike in Folkestone, isn't it more a question of how the Deputy Prime Minister afforded a second house of that value? Well, she has got a decent salary as a Deputy Prime Minister. We will stay with this conversation. More calls coming in. And then after the news, I'll be asking, are you one of the tens of thousands of people who've lost your job in the hospitality sector? And if so, just how difficult is it to get back into work? Hayden Meisen is the joint managing director of the brewery chain McMullen's.
When something comes as such a surprise as the last budget with the national insurance contributions on top of the minimum wage, it's just too much.
More on that after this. 8:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC, and the news is with Thomas Watts.
About 100 asylum seekers could be returned to France within weeks as part of a new one-in, one-out deal. But Nigel Farage, who will set out reforms deportation policy this morning, says the treaty is unworkable. The Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook, has told Nick there is no hypocrisy in Angela Rayner's purchase of a home near Brighton. The Housing Secretary also has a constituency home in Greater Manchester and a Grace and Favour flat in London. Major news agencies have demanded a clear explanation from Israel over a deadly airstrike on a hospital in Gaza. Five journalists were among at least 20 people killed in a so-called double tap strike in Khan Yunis yesterday. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees.
Coming up this week on LBC, Penny Mordaunt.
That we want to demonstrate to people who might be partners in the future that we can be trusted, that they can work with us in this way.
Emily Thornberry.
Zelensky doesn't trust Putin. And there are times when you wonder just how much Trump trusts Putin and seems to be quite naive about it.
James Cleverly.
It didn't have to be like this. We were closing asylum hotels. We had a series of plans.
Ed Davey.
I'm still pretty worried that Donald Trump just wants to do a deal with Vladimir Putin, and that comes first rather than the interest of Ukraine.
4 days, four voices. Starts today from 10 a.m. only on LBC.
Oh, he's chucking it down out there again.
Want some Mao and pimples?
Mmm, so zingly.
Like a lightning storm in your cheeks.
Tingling like thunderbolts on your tongue.
And a 200% chance
of mouth-watering taste quakes.
Tornado incoming!
With the zingly-tingly taste of Mao and pimples, it's easy to choose fun, chew Mao and.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears! And four giant slides on the brand new Waverunner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park!
The sun goes on and on and on and on!
Book now at nutcatch.com!
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34. Let's come back to a story that we talked about in the first hour, which is concerning figures in the field of the hospitality sector. Now, this can be everything, really, from the young man or woman who helps you in your coffee shop all the way through to the people in your restaurant, through to the hotel, the whole industry. And we're already looking, as we heard from the your organisation that have done an analysis of the figures, 89,000 jobs lost since last October. 89,000. And concerns, of course, that number will grow because of the implementation of what's called the NI, or National Insurance Hikes. Now, these figures have been produced by the organisation UK Hospitality, and they analysed what are called ONS numbers, or Office for National Statistics, and they pointed to that autumn budget. You may have been listening. The organisation UK Hospitality acts for more than 123,000 venues, and they said that now their sector, 53% of all job losses. So let's pause for a moment and think. A government that said it would go for growth has brought in a measure in hike of national insurance that has knocked out 53% of those 89,000 jobs, 53% of all job losses. This is really tough. I'm asking you, by the way, if you are in that industry, if you work in hospitality, you were a waiter, waitress, you were in a bar, you were in a hotel, and you lost your job, you're one of those 89,000, what are you doing? How hard is it? Well, let's speak to someone who sadly had to make the decision to let some staff go. Lara Baglione is Managing Director at Petersham Nurseries, which is based out in southwest London, close to Richmond, and they were forced to close restaurants in Covent Garden at the start of the year. May I call you Lara? Good morning.
Hello,
good morning.
Yes, can I call you Lara? What were the restaurants that you had to close and why did you take that decision?
Yes, you can call me Lara. The restaurants that we had to close was in Covent Garden. We had two beautiful restaurants and a courtyard called Floral Court. And we had to take the decision to close because of the, I guess it's a perfect storm at the moment, which is what you've been talking about, of hikes in costs, people's spending being reduced, and the general landscape of London changing quite considerably for hospitality.
Lara, how many people did you have to let go, and how tough is the industry these months on?
Well, we had to let go 96 people, which was obviously very tough. People who've been with us for since the day we opened for 5-7 years. And I don't think things are necessarily getting any better.
How have you noticed the spending habits of your customers changing?
People are feeling it, aren't they? And I think hospitality, like probably many other sectors, are the first places that feel the pinch, because when people have less money to spend, they probably cut that extra dinner out. And you see it across everything. It's not just personal. It's also in businesses as well, corporate event spending being cut. We used to do a lot of events, and you can see that people are spending a lot less and are being a lot more wary about where they're putting their money. And things like dinners and celebrations and things like that can often be put by the wayside.
We're getting close to the autumn budget. What does the sector need to see, Lara?
I think we need to see a lot of things. I think we need to see our costs being reduced considerably. I think that can be in rates, VAT. We've obviously been pinched significantly by the NIC increases. We've had a constant minimum wage hikes, and I think it's all put a massive strain on the hospitality sector in general. We've got it coming at us from both sides. We've got all of our costs increasing considerably, which in a normal economic climate, one would then look to take pricing and find a way to balance these out, to be able to cover them ourselves. But actually, when people are spending less and they're much more wary of what they've got in their pockets and what they've got to spend, you get squashed from science. So it puts a sector like hospitality into a very difficult position.
Lara, thanks for your time, and thanks for battling through with not the greatest of quality lines there. Lara Buglioni is Managing Director of Petersham Nurseries. They're based out in close to Richmond. I don't know why trying to speak to someone in Richmond is akin to speaking to someone in Kabul, but there we are, it is what it is. They had to close their two restaurants in Covent Garden earlier this year, La Goccia and the Petersham. 96 people losing their job. If you have been, or if you're working in that industry, you must be really nervous, or you're a boss in that industry, and you employ 96 people, 100 people, thousands of people. What has the impact been on your bottom line? How much extra are you having to pay? And for a government that was going to talk about growth, don't see a lot of it, do you? Let's come back to Angela Rayner, though. The government minister telling me that it's not a story that you have a housing secretary who has three separate houses or separate residences, to be absolutely accurate. Angela's in Hampstead. Angela, good morning.
Good morning. First of all, on behalf of all your million of listeners, congratulations to you and Claire.
Oh, thank you very much.
For your
we really are in the
you.
Public now, aren't we? Thank you very you much. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Right. Now, more important. Last month was copy and paste with the homeless minister.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now it's Angela Rayner.
Yes.
You know, these women are running a pretty slick property empire. I mean, let's be realistic. They sit down and decide to say to each other, oh, I just bought here, I just bought there.
Yeah.
And they've got and paid all their costs. But just think about it. You buy yourself an £800,000 apartment.
Yep.
You have to find £80,000 in the stamp duty. Yep. Of course, she had it, but nevertheless, we don't all have it anymore. We're all being imposed.
Mm-hmm.
But she miraculously managed to pick it all up. Nothing makes sense.
What does it say, lastly, Anthony, what does it say to you about this government?
We are being manipulated in the worst possible way.
Anthony, thank you, and thank you for your kind words right at the top of the call. Jackie in Worthing, it isn't hypocrisy with Angela Rayner. It would only be that if she'd bought a second house and didn't pay the council tax. I think it's misogyny. The callers you have are all men. The media don't like a working class woman doing well for herself and succeeding and showing her wealth. Listen, if she was the Northern Ireland secretary, yeah, of course, good luck. But she's the housing secretary and the deputy prime minister. And as we heard from one of our colleagues, they are supposedly working day and night to ensure that more houses are built. And this woman has taken three off the market. As the point that, as Anthony just said, it's like the homeless minister, homelessness minister, that's right, because she's not homeless. Having tenants leave her property, which was then marketed at a greater price. Honestly, Jackie, if you can't see that as extraordinary hypocrisy, I really am surprised, but I will continue to read them. Kev in Manchester, it's a non-story. I wonder if you'd be as angry if it was a bloke buying a third home who'd gone to Eton. Yes, if he was the housing minister, or housing secretary in this case, yes, I would. But let's talk hospitality and the devastation that's been wrought in that sector. Joseph's in Cardiff. Joseph, do you work in it? Good morning.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, thank you, sir. What are you going to tell me?
Thank you. First-time caller, so I'm a bit nervous.
Oh, please don't be. You used a phone before.
basically, I've worked as a pizza chef.
Okay.
For a long time now, about 7 years.
Right.
And I'm no expert on economics or anything like that.
Right.
But something I have seen is the increased prices it costs us to import goods from abroad.
Right. Okay.
Mainly due to Brexit, which is the obvious buzzword here.
Right.
But that's just something I wanted to say as well, is maybe something that is playing part in this.
Are you still in the sector? You're still a pizza chef now?
Yeah, I'm still a pizza chef now.
Do you notice the restaurant? Do you work in one specific restaurant, or how is it that you operate?
I work in one specific restaurant right now, yes.
Have you noticed that there are fewer customers coming in now than there were? Or how would you say, footfall or trade is?
Footfall, it fluctuates like anything, really. But obviously over the summer we've been quite busy, which is fantastic to see.
Mm.
But I have noticed, I sometimes question, like when we're quite busy, I do question, how do people afford to come and eat in the first place? Because, I mean, I get by on a shoestring.
Mm.
I'm not exactly what you would class as poor either. I own my own home.
Right.
I'm 33. But I do struggle, and it does make me wonder, how do these people afford to come into restaurants?
Well, fortunately they do, and they keep you in business. Thanks for being a first time, first class. You had nothing to be worrying about at all. Thank you for your input. Let's get some of the texts that are coming. There seems to be an issue with the email system, of which I've just been made aware. We are working hard to resolve it, I assure you. Bob in Blackpool says, I'm a Labour voter. The question I'd be asking is, how is Angela Rayner affording an £800,000 second home on a salary of around £100,000 plus? Houses in Ashton and Underlyme are fairly cheap. She's either making much more than £100,000 by doing other work, or MPs are earning more than we think. I'm sure there's nothing inappropriate going on around there. Diane says, your housing minister, so that was Matthew Pennycook as opposed to Angela Rayner, is out of step. Round my area in Hertfordshire, we're fed up with houses popping up everywhere, even on Broxbourne school playing fields. Fewer people is what we need. Too many houses are spoiling people's villages, putting the green belt at risk. Plenty of calls coming in on that, on you, Adam. Poonam, you're going to be talking about hospitality, but we need to get off to the newsroom. 8:45, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Reform leader Nigel Farage will set out his party's plan to tackle English Channel crossings this morning. Reuters and the Associated Press have demanded a clear explanation from Israel over a deadly airstrike in Gaza. A housing minister has defended Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise. The motorway stays closed between junctions 25 at the A10 and 24 at Porter's Bar. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier. The queues are almost back to junction 28, but the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all, especially the North Circular Road through Walthamstow, Edmonton and Palmer's Green. But then also on the M25 anti-clockwise, just before junction 28 at the A12, there's been a separate accident and only one lane's open and that's causing delays back to junction 29 at the A127. Severe delays continue on the M1 northbound heading up to towards junction 10 at Luton Airport because a lorry has overturned.
This is LBC.
Got the tiles?
Got the snacks?
K-W-E-E-N. Queen, 18 points.
That's so not how you spell it, but I'll let you off. My turn.
Snap into the sharing bar that goes with any evening. Kit Kat sharing bars. Crispy Kit Kat wafers with three irresistible fillings in hazelnut, salted caramel or double chocolate, covered in thick marbled swirls. Perfect for sharing. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Just coming up on 10 minutes before nine, having been told by a government minister that there's nothing to see here, I prefer to take your views on whether the Angela Rayner story, Angela Three Homes Rayner, to remind you of course, another former Deputy Prime Minister for the Labour Party, John Tujaj Prescott, whether it is a story. Adam in Scunthorpe, is it or is it not? Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
I think the hypocrisy for me is that there are lots of people around this country who rent and buy second properties purely for the purpose of attending work. Now, when I rent a property, because I live in the north and work in the south, I have to pay council tax.
Yes.
So why do ministers get provided their properties and the council tax gets discharged? That's the first hypocrisy. And the second is, do they declare the use of the property in London to HMRC as a benefit in kind for their personal use of the property?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I mean, the argument might be, I don't know what it is you do, but they might say, look, Adam, the government minister has to have a property somewhere in the London area because they represent the people of Ashton-under-Lyme or Scunthorpe or Sunderland or whatever, so that they don't have a choice. They could argue that you do have a choice. If you wanted to come and live, I don't know where you were, in London, then you do that, is what they might say.
Well, you have a choice wherever you want to work, but if you choose to provide your own accommodation so that you can work and take that job, that if I went and rented a property in the south, which I have done in the past for work, I had to pay the bills and I had to pay the council tax on that property. I don't see it as any different as to why they work in London. That's where their job is. When they apply to be an MP, they know exactly where they're going to have to go to work. So why is it any different to the rest of us?
So you think they should... they should effectively bear all the travel costs themselves. Accommodation costs themselves.
They should contribute towards the accommodation costs. I can completely understand that for security purposes, they can't go staying in hotels.
Yes.
Because then, obviously, the government would just provide hotels for them.
Yes.
But if I rented a property for that purpose, then I would have to pay the council tax.
Yeah.
So I don't see why they should get let off.
What is, just out of interest, you don't mind my asking, what is it that you do that you can't do it at home and you have to come south?
I run an engineering company that's based in the south.
Right.
So I periodically have to go to the office down there.
Of course you do. Yeah, of course.
I split my time north and south.
Right.
And so for a period of time, I rented a property in the south.
Right.
And that's how I chose to deal with it at the time. But I had to pick up those bills, and I can't see the reason why they don't have to either.
Adam, I hear what you say. Let's see what others make of it. It is a story in Adam's book. Thank you. David's in Castle Carey in Somerset. David, is it a story for you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and happy wedding.
Thank you. Thanks, mate.
the fun starts here.
That's it.
I just listening. I've got the radio on in the background. It's just the overall like tone. What I'm feeling is like it seems to be this like, well, she's got so much money. How can she afford to do this? Why she's got three homes? And what I can see is she's got two homes. And the government provides her with accommodation in London where she works, which I think it does for all politicians. You know, if they're working from London, they do get that grace and favour. So it's kind of like the story.
Well, it depends on their level. You get grace and favour if you're senior level. Otherwise, you get accommodation allowance, effectively.
And I've not looked too deep into this. I'm not overly political or anything. But it just has that feeling like everyone's just hearing the word three. She's got three homes. How can she afford that? An awful lot of jealousy. It just has that undertone of jealousy and like, oh, how can she afford to buy £800,000?
I hear that, but do you not see hypocrisy as well as jealousy, David?
Possibly. Again, I don't know what the situation is with the grace and favour side of it, where they do.
Well, let me ask you: do you think that she is someone who, understandably, promotes her working class credentials?
So to have one
house in your constituency, to have use of an apartment in a very, very ritzy part of London, and have a seafront property in Hove, which is a very desirable part of Sussex, does that sit with being working class?
No, but we're all aspirational, aren't we?
Yeah,
we're all trying to say we want to come up. So,
but then you double the tax on anybody with a second home.
Sorry, Nick.
But then you bring in a policy that doubles the tax on anyone else with a second. She will pay double the tax, by the way. I'm not saying she's dodging it, but it does, to me, there's a lot of hypocrisy around this.
It's the tone of it, I think, is on that side. The coloration of it is that, oh, how come there's, she's got this ability to do this. It's going to cost the government this money to pay. However, surely all the grace and favour places in London will be the part that the taxes will be going up on them, and again the government will be covering them. So it's kind of like we've got to take out the grace and favour place out of the equation.
I hear what you say. David, thank you for making that point. Have yourself a good day down in Somerset, lovely part of Somerset. Jane says, I disagree with the message from Jackie. I'm a female. I believe this is a story, and it is hypocrisy. They're a Labour government, which allegedly believes we should all support each other, yet they're systematically putting small businesses out of business with their tax increases. She and others are very much do as I say, not do as I do. The senior ministers could be mistaken for Tories. On the subject of people losing their jobs, by the way, Leanne says, my teenage daughter worked part-time in a local restaurant. It closed last month. The owner could not sustain increased costs. She was made redundant before she was 17. How on earth did we get here? I'm so sorry for your daughter. She's one of the 89,000 people, 89,000 who've lost their jobs in that particular sector. Munesh in Southall. Munesh, is Angela Rayner a story? Good morning.
She's a very big story, and I think you hit the nail on the head. If she hadn't been in her job, people wouldn't be complaining
saying
that this is just because she's a woman. At the same time, you mentioned
Two Jags Prescott.
That's it, Two Jags Prescott. Mm. And as far as I can remember, he's not a female or single or whatever. So,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
First of all, congratulations.
Oh, right, thank you.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Minesh. That's very kind. Thanks for all of that. Please, it's lovely, but please don't think you have to congratulate. It's very kind of you. But it's done now, and we move on. Craig's in Cannock. Thanks, Munesh. Craig in Cannock. What are you going to say, Craig? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Firstly, I'm going to mention about what you said about Angela Rayner's working-class credentials.
Yes.
I'll tell you someone else who's got working-class credentials, Sir Alan Sugar.
Right.
And
yes.
Everybody's, like, lauding how his working-class boy done good.
Yes, but he's not the housing secretary, is he?
No, that's a fair comment, but I was going to come to that side of things. I don't think it is a major story as far as Angela Rayner's concerned, because it was a Tory government that brought in the policy under Michael Gove.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Gove had a second house, a second home at the time. And it was hardly a story at that time. Yeah, I did a quick search on Google to just get the details.
Okay.
And it was pretty much no story at all at the time.
Right.
I think there was one newspaper article, according to Google, that particularly went into the fact that he got a second home.
Right.
And that was it.
Okay.
Where Angela Rayner thing's been going on for 4 or 5 days now, that it seems to be everything.
Well, I was away. My understanding was it broke on Sunday. I don't know. I was away, but that's
3 days.
That is a fair point. But of course, we now know this woman has use of three different homes.
Yeah, but one of them is not so much a home as a residence. It's one that's provided by the state because of her position.
Okay.
If you were provided an accommodation with LBC because of your prominent role, would you count that as your actual home that you own?
But I'm not a housing...
No, you wouldn't.
No, but I'm not the housing secretary. This is the point.
No, but what I'm saying is it's still... It may be a residence, but it's not her own home. It's not somewhere she's bought. As soon as she steps down from her role as Deputy Prime Minister, she's going to lose that.
Of course, she is. Okay. Look, I absolutely get your rationale. I take it on trust what you say about Michael Gove, if that's the case. Thank you for your input. I've been also wanted to talk about the appalling, almost decimation of the hospitality sector. 89,000 jobs, and a senior member of Hospitality UK saying that it will be 100,000 jobs or higher by the time we get to the next budget. Poonam in Croydon. Poonam, what is it that you do? You're in this industry, is that right? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yes, I'm in finance, actually, hospitality, not the usual sort of chef, bartender type role that people think about when they hear the number 89,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But it affects us just the same. I worked for a company, and whilst I was on maternity leave, it was...
So what is it your company actually does then? It provides what sort of hospitality, just to nail it?
No, we're in-house finance team. You know, these companies, they
have... in-house finance team?
Yeah, they have in-house finance, IT, HR, all the normal roles that you have in any business.
Right.
So I worked for a pub company that was bought out by a competitor.
I see. I've got you now. Yep. So you worked for a big pub company in the finance, and I obviously don't name them, but what happened? Are they still managing to trade? What went wrong?
They were bought out by a competitor. So those pubs, thank God, they are still trading and they are still thriving. But the business that bought us out, they had no need for more overhead. So all us finance, IT, HR, ops team members, we were all let go.
And do you know if they were able to find work afterwards?
I'll be honest, I have kept in really close contact with all my old colleagues, and everyone has struggled. A lot of people have found other hospitality jobs that haven't stuck because the industry is struggling so much, and other people have just completely jumped ship and gone into different businesses.
Poonam, thank you for that. What about you? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm still looking, if I'm honest. There's very few finance roles out there right now, so I'm sort of considering other industries, but it's such a shame because I've been in hospitality for so long. I love doing the work. I look at things like pricing, so...
You're going to miss it. All right, Poonam, I'm glad we got you. The line's going a little bit there, so I will let you go. Thank you for your input on that. Coming up after the news, as the music starts, the shock report that says thousands of children are being sent home from school due to racist behaviour, some of whom, though, are aged four. Can a four-year-old be racist? Plus, flexible hours for menopausal women could boost the economy. Katie Taylor founded the Latte Lounge.
I was existing on about 3 hours sleep a night. I was dragging myself into the office. I couldn't concentrate because I was so exhausted.
So just how devastating are the impact, or is the impact, or the impacts of the menopause? Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Home Office is reportedly preparing to return 100 migrants to France as Reform UK sets out its plans to tackle the issue. A record total of more than 28,000 people have crossed the English Channel in small boats so far this year. Nigel Farage will detail his proposals for mass deportations later this morning. The Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook, has told Nick that Labour is getting a grip on the problem.
It was never going to be an overnight fix. But the range of measures we're taking from this groundbreaking pilot scheme with France for returns, this is a pilot scheme. We're getting it up and running, but we are making progress. The first asylum seekers under that scheme have been detained. We will see removals to France in the coming weeks.
Mr. Pennycook has told Nick there is no story in Angela Rayner's purchase of a property near Brighton. It's in addition to the Housing Secretary's home in Greater Manchester and Grace and Favour flat in central London. The government is introducing a clearer definition of so-called honour-based abuse. Public sector workers will receive training to spot the signs of violence and provide better support to victims. Associated crimes include female genital mutilation and forced marriage. Reuters and the Associated Press have demanded a clear explanation from Israel over an airstrike in Gaza. Five journalists were among at least 20 people killed in a so-called double-tap strike on a hospital in Khan Yunis yesterday. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says it was a tragic mishap. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, a former Israeli military spokesman, has been speaking to Nick.
What appears to have happened is a misidentification on the ground where Israeli troops operating nearby misidentified and thought that what they were seeing was a Hamas cell or Hamas terrorists that were actually collecting intelligence on them, when in fact it appears to have been a journalist.
Higher prices for chocolate, butter and eggs have helped to drive an increase in food inflation. The British Retail Consortium says prices are 4.2% higher than a year ago, up from a rate of 4% in July. That is the fastest pace of price rises in 18 months. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 92.73. That's down 48. The pound buys $1.35 and the euro 15. LBC weather today, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn, Dad's cooking tea, Ash is upstairs spinning tunes, and the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas Tariffs. British Gas. Taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine on Tuesday, August the 26th, the disturbing report that shows the number of children sent home from school due to racist language or behaviour soaring to a record level. Some of the children, though, are four. Can a four-year-old be racist? Does he/she actually know what they're saying? Plus, go to work or be fired. That's the message to peers. Green Party peer Jenny, now Baroness Jones, says the whole chamber's in need of drastic reform.
We've got an incredibly old-fashioned system. We need the second chamber, we do really valuable work, but the way that people arrive in the second chamber is mostly by grace and favour appointments from the Prime Minister.
Why? Why do we need the importance of the so-called second chamber, the reviewing body that is the House of Lords? Plus the idea, flexible hours for menopausal women could help keep them in work and even, it says here, boost the economy. Grace Malloy is a registered nurse specialising in the field.
Really what they should be doing is asking, how are you impacted by menopause? You know, what are your symptoms? How's it affecting you at work? And then how can we help?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Reception class children who are aged 4 and 5 are among the record number of pupils being sent home from school because of racist behaviour, says an exclusive in today's Daily Mirror. Latest figures show suspensions for racism increased to more than 15,000 in the year 2023 to 2024, the last year for which full figures are available. Context, 31% up on the previous year, more than 100% up as recently as 2020-2021. Now, campaigners say standards of behaviour were hit by the pandemic. Lack of social contact is said to have had a lasting impact. I've read the story twice, and I cannot get a full handle on exactly what is being seen as racist behaviour. There are physical attacks of which they speak, vandalism and obscene graffiti, I can get my head around that. Some children get into trouble at school for racist posts on social media platforms, but I doubt that they're four. So, can a four-year-old be racist? 70 cases of children being permanently excluded due to racist behaviour last year. That was at 45 3 years ago. The group that gets in most trouble for racism is year eight. Well, that's your second year of what we call big school, so typically you're going to be 12, 13 then. So how could a four-year-old be racist? If it's important to you, the Mirror breaks it down county by county. Sadly, Essex jumps out of the page at the number of suspensions, but I have to say Kent jumps out of the page at the number of expulsions, so problems in the home counties. Let's turn first to Pepe D'Azio, who's General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders. Is this something you and your colleagues regularly discuss or encounter? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. And yes, this is something that we're aware of as an increasing worrying trend and, in fact, reflects perhaps wider issues of society. Schools do often reflect wider issues of society, and it's widely reported that behaviour in schools has been worsening post-pandemic, and we're seeing many young people struggling to cope with their behaviour. But what you're reporting here and what you're seeing here, particularly with the younger students, I believe is a reflection on a polarised society that we're seeing more evident each and every day in our country at the moment.
In what way are we polarised?
Well, I think all too often it's easy to report the differences that we have between people in our communities. It's been headlines for the last 2 weeks, particularly in those areas that you highlighted from the article in the newspaper. And what we should be doing is celebrating our communities and celebrating the diversity of our communities. And I think many schools will have been focusing on diversity and equality. And as a part of that, many teachers will be learning more about how to deal with issues such as racism. And as a byproduct of that, we will see more instances of racism reported that perhaps may have gone unchallenged previously and may have gone unnoticed previously.
Do you think a four-year-old can be racist?
Well, clearly we've had instances of it here. It's incredibly shocking, isn't it, that we have that situation?
You think a four-year-old...
I would suggest...
I mean, I know that they can learn the words, and I know I can rely on you, Pepe, not to say those words, and they might hear them at home from mum, dad, grandparents or whatever. But you're telling me a four-year-old knows what they're saying and the hurt and the abusive nature of what they're saying. Are you really...
I'd like to think not, Nick. And what we're seeing there is the inappropriate use of language that they may have heard either in their community or in their home. And it's the school challenging that and wanting to use that as an opportunity to make sure they educate both that young person and perhaps more significantly the family home to make sure that that's totally inappropriate and reinforcing that.
I mean, some would argue, and you and your colleagues are far closer to this, these children need help rather than expulsion or suspension.
Absolutely, particularly at four, Nick. If a four-year-old is using inappropriate or racist language, then we need to support them. We need them to help them understand that that's inappropriate, why it's inappropriate, and also to help them communicate, because often that's the communication of something that is perhaps something else in their lives, and we need to help them through that and make sure that they have the emotional literacy and the emotional language to be able to say how they're feeling or say when they're upset. And a four-year-old needs to develop that over time so that when they get to year eight, it's not an issue that is something that they've thought through and decided to use as an offensive weapon.
Never gets any easier being a teacher, does it, Pepe?
thank you for that, Nick. No, but can I just tell you, I mean, we're due back at school in the next few weeks, yeah. And I promise you, we're looking forward to getting back, and it is one of the greatest jobs in the world because it's so important to us, to society, and we need to remember how great this country is and what a pleasure it is to be in schools of young people 99% of the time.
Look after yourself. Thanks for your time. Pepe DeLazio is General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders. Listening, Sarah Johnson, who's an educational consultant and president of PRUSAP, which is a national organisation supporting the policy direction for pupil referral units and alternative provisions in England. Thank you for coming on. How shocked are you or otherwise by these figures? Good morning.
Hello, thank you for the question. I'm not shocked. I think it's probably a reflection of what's happening in wider society. So it's not shocking in itself. It's troublesome and it's upsetting. And my kind of next question is, what can we do to support children and teachers and the wider community to be more accepting of differences?
Yes. Can I ask you, do you think a four-year-old child is racist?
I don't think that a four-year-old child can be racist in the same way that an adult is. I think they can act out or they can repeat racist ideas. The age of 3 and 4, a child can notice things such as differences in skin colour, their yes. language or their cultural practices. And they might begin to attach value judgments to that. For example, pretty or bad or dirty or something along those lines. But they're often absorbed by their wider environment. So I think schools have a real strong thing.
Duty. Yeah, indeed. 70 cases of children being permanently excluded. The year most is falling into year 8, children 12 or 13. Should that child be excluded? Surely that child needs extra work rather than being, I'm going to use the word, expelled.
I think often exclusion comes at an end of very challenging and difficult behaviour, and that might be the tipping point around it. I think all children should feel safe in the school environment. For me, I'm not here to say whether or not schools should or shouldn't exclude. There are particular rules and legislation around that. However, I would absolutely hear what you're saying, that a child, it should be the more support for that child rather than less support. And that's why pupil referral units and alternative provision become really important about what are the next steps. What you also don't want is a child that's being racist and abusive, hurting another child within that school environment, because nobody feels safe then.
Lastly, just tell us a little bit more of the work that PRUSAP does.
PRUSAP works with pupil referral units and alternative provision across the country around policy decisions and supporting staff members around professional development and so on. We work with the DfE and Ofsted around what does excellent work look like in pupil referral units and alternative provision. And we look at supporting change within that environment. Going back to your question, Nick, should we have exclusions? No, I would love PRUSAP to not exist, and every school is able to support all children to feel safe and belong.
And I note that you were head of behaviour for a London borough. I think it was London Borough of Redbridge. Did you encounter any racist incidents with the pupils in your time there?
Yeah, so London Borough of Redbridge is incredibly interesting in terms of having a strong Jewish community. It's obviously been in the news recently around displacement hotels. So, yes, there were issues relating to racism and children being suspended and excluded for those reasons, and very high-end incidences around
violence. So what's a high-end? I know I can rely on you not saying anything inappropriate, but what's a high-end incident? What does that mean?
Hurting other...
Actual violence...
Actual violence, but also things like graffiti, things like Nazi symbols and things like that. So, you know, what you would say is being intimidating, frightening, and that other people wouldn't feel safe within that environment. This was a number of years ago, but I think there's lots of tensions that have been shown in the news around schools are a microcosm. They're a smaller environment of what's happening in the wider society. Your four-year-old child, as you said, I don't think can be racist, but they can echo and repeat and mirror the attitudes and languages and stereotypes around them. So I think schools have a key piece of work to do, but so does wider society, around how do we include children and communities from with differences.
Thanks for your time. Sarah Johnson, you were head of behaviour and inclusion for the London Borough of Redbridge Schools, and you're an education consultant and president of the organisation PRUSAP. So can a child, as I say it now, thirdly for the fourth time, yes, the child can say inappropriate language, but would they be racist? And when you move to the year in which there are the most incidents, year 8, children aged 12, 13, expelling them, excluding them, whatever you want to call it, how helpful is that? We'll look at that. Plus the idea of flexible hours for menopausal women. Women even could keep them in work and boost the economy. I'll try and explain the rationale behind that. 9.15 LBC News headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
About 100 asylum seekers could be returned to France within weeks as part of a new one-in-one-out treaty. The Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook, has told Nick there is no hypocrisy in Angela Rayner's purchase of a home near Brighton. And major news agencies have demanded a clear explanation from Israel over a deadly airstrike in Gaza. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 25 at the A10. Just after the junction, a lorry was on fire. Traffic is now able to squeeze past in one of the lanes, but as a result, there are lengthy delays all the way back past junction 27 at the M11. Surrounding routes also extremely congested. But then also on the M25, there are anti-clockwise delays to junction 28 at the A12, and that's because there's a load of debris across the road. Only one lane's open on the M1 northbound just after junction 10 at Luton Airport because a lorry has overturned, so that's causing lengthy delays. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo and Victoria lines.
This is LBC.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn. Dad's cooking tea. Ash is upstairs spinning tunes. And the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas Tariffs. British Gas. Taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes.
Georgie, is this too much guitar?
Yep, lost them. But I offered to get drinks on my own. It's okay. Find the flag with the DJ and cat. Oh, there they are.
Rich.
Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Summer's nearly over. It's time to get back to real life. Luckily, Cinch has got all the essentials sorted. And we're not talking about new textbooks. Let's see. The biggest range of cars to buy entirely online? Check. Free 90-day warranty? Sorted. And fat-free Cinch servicing at a Marshall store near you? Absolutely cinched it. Everything you need and not a pencil case in sight. Cinch it for yourself today. Visit cinch.co.uk. Comparison against equivalent retailers. Visit cinch.co.uk/range claim. Terms and exclusions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
A four-year-old racist or a racist four-year-old. I'm not buying it. I'm buying the language. They don't know what they're saying. They know not what they say. Lawrence in Camden, what do you see as the reality? Good morning.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Good, thanks. What are you going to tell me?
Well, it comes from the parents.
Yeah, of course. Sure. Absolutely.
Okay, you can. I mean, how is a four-year-old child or a three-year-old child going to be racist unless the parents are?
No, I agree. But the it's not a three-year-old, but the four-year-old is only saying the words that he, she has heard in the house. They don't know what they mean.
Look, to be quite honest with you, this whole thing makes me sick. And it makes me upset. Because it's like,
what aspect of it? What do you mean? What part of it makes you upset?
Well, the fact that you think that because your skin is whiter than theirs, that makes you better than they are.
How on earth have you divined my view from what I've just said to you? How did you get to there from that?
Look, man, we've been, you know, racism has been something that has been a part of our lives. I'm 52 years old. It's been a part of our lives as long as we've been alive. But then again, when you look at like athletes and you look at like who was the GOAT, who was the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali? He refused to go to Vietnam because he was like, they've never done anything to me.
I'm not sure how we've got from four-year-old children allegedly being racist to Muhammad Ali.
Because it's from the root to the fruit. It starts from the parents.
Are you telling me that, and I say again, Lawrence, of course they know the words, they actually understand the concept of racism at four?
Well, I mean, you know, you go to school at what, 5 years old, kindergarten, you go to kindergarten, if they start teaching you that you're better than they are because your skin is whiter than they are.
I don't think, I'm not familiar because it's a long time since I've been to school age five, but that's exactly not what our teachers are teaching, Lawrence.
No.
If there is racism being picked up, it obviously
is. I'm saying it's the parents. It's the parents.
Yes.
I live in a country now where I'm actually quite afraid of the way that, like, they're raising up, like, with racism and immigration and
it's, give me an example of what frightens you.
The way that, like, these people are going out there and trying to cause trouble and hurt people.
What people causing trouble to whom and where? Who? What?
Right wing or the right wing? The racists.
The racists. Which racists? Where, Lawrence?
Well, it starts with. Let's start with Nigel Farage. Okay, we'll go there.
In my mind, he is not a racist, Lawrence. You can have your opinion. He certainly has strong views, but I don't think that he's a racist. But we expand a little on what you're saying. Lawrence, have yourself a good day. You're making unsubstantiated suggestions and allegations about people who aren't here to defend themselves. I tried every which way to get you into a conversation. I just don't think we're going to get there. Let's feature some of the social media that's coming in this. We haven't got any emails at the moment. I've no idea why. Stuart says, telling brown-skinned pupils that they are dirty is racist. They don't need to know the roots of racism. If they won't change their behaviour, it needs to be challenged. Again, I'm asking you whether a four-year-old would know. Whether a four-year-old would know. Samantha says, all children should feel safe at school. So as a parent of a child who has experienced racism, I don't think we should centre and mollycoddle children who perpetrate it. They and their parents should be challenged. Well, that's probably the most sensible thing we've heard so far on this, actually, which is the idea that if you do have a racist four-year-old, she is almost certainly the racism is going to be coming from the parents or possibly the grandparents or an uncle or an aunt, I don't know. And that's what ought to be challenged. OK, we'll have more on that in a moment. But another story that's already got you calling in is the idea that companies will be encouraged to offer flexible working to menopausal women under the government's plans to improve workers' rights. This is an exclusive by the I newspaper. Ministers believe that allowing female staff who are experiencing symptoms of the menopause to work from home or have flexible hours will keep them in their jobs for longer. This would help businesses retain experienced staff and boost the economy. 1 in 10 women in employment during their menopause have been forced to leave their job due to some severe symptoms. And here we are. A government commissioned review of the latest scientific research into menopause, which was published last month, showed the cost of the British economy to be around £1.5 billion a year. But then it doesn't explain how they get to that figure. Why? This is a bit like children of racists at four. What do they say? I don't know. This is costing the country £1.5 billion a year. How? I don't know. Why do they put these figures in and there's no substantiation for them? Anyway, let's get to someone who might be able to help us. Kate Roham is a menopausal wellness coach, founder of Owning Your Menopause, an app, which, Kate, if I may call you that, you'll explain exactly what that app does. What does it do, Kate? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Hello. Are you?
All right, thank you. What are you going to tell me, Kate? How does this work, then?
Yes. So, well, the app is a great app because it is aiming at supporting women manage many of the symptoms that show up through menopause, through fitness, lifestyle changes, so that they can, you know, as we are here talking about this today, hopefully remain in the workplace or feel supported in the workplace so that we can keep women in work for longer. So it's an app helping across the board, which aims to support them at through this stage.
What sort of help should an employer be looking to provide?
I think first and foremost, it's understanding the impact of many of the symptoms in the workplace. And I think one of the most important ones really for women, bar the symptoms, is actually the lack of confidence that can come, because many women, as they come into this life stage, aren't even aware themselves that they're going through perimenopause and menopause. So if we're having these conversations in the workplace, that might then potentially be on our radar. But we've got women at the top of their games who are, you know, faced with, they're in boardrooms, they're having meetings, they get brain fog, they're having sweats, and essentially they lose their confidence and don't think that they're good at their job anymore. I think the bottom line in all of this is that, you know, these flexible working ideas and menopause-friendly policies, that it's not special treatment, which I know many people sort of think about, that they're smart and they're inclusive business strategies that will benefit, you know, women, companies, and obviously the economy, which you've already said, you know, at 1.5 billion cost per year.
Yeah, but we don't know how we get to that figure, Kate. That's the problem.
We don't. You're right, and I think that you know it would be good to do some more of this. But I think mainly it's lost from sort of the talent and the productivity. We are the fastest growing group, you know, women in the UK workforce, and I guess where they're going with it, that perhaps it strengthens the tax base. It will reduce pressure on healthcare and pensions. I think that is, you know, that will be where their figure will be coming from. If you've got a woman who has to take time off work, by default, it will become a larger cost, you know, to the NHS and tax costs.
The government talk about having menopause action plans for larger firms in operation or in position from 2027. What, and that would be companies with 250 staff or greater, what should a menopause action plan include?
I think that every office, every workspace should have somebody who is equipped to understand what menopause deals with. So they've got like a menopause hub, a menopause cafe.
A
menopause cafe, yeah. Lots of workplaces have these menopause cafes and these Zooms where women can come and they can share.
You can only go to the menopause cafe if you're a menopausal woman?
No, absolutely not. And that's what I really hope would happen, is that men would become involved in these conversations. And actually, Nick, I've been to lots of workplaces. I went to a very large accountancy firm only last year where a talk was open to every single employee. It was mostly men. However, sadly, not one man turned up to that talk. So it is very important to include men in the conversation.
Okay. What can they provide? Because obviously they're not going through it.
No, they're not going through it. I think it's they can provide support for their colleagues, for their employees. I think if men can understand what they are going through, and a woman is in a place where she's unable to fulfill her job, you know, sadly, what we are seeing, because women are going through this life stage, there are more CEOs, there are more COO roles within businesses that men are taking. And if they understood, I think, menopause, I think we would see a massive shift in that as well.
Grateful for your input. Kate Rowe Ham is a menopause wellness coach and founder of Owning Your Menopause. Check out the app. Thank you for that. But it's the idea of racist children that's getting a lot of the phone calls and a lot of the action. Susan Jin Chigwell, now this happens to speak to you about your daughter, is that right?
Hi, Nick. Yeah. Yes, it is. So listening to Lawrence, I felt quite sad, actually, that he has such a preconception and he's so angry and has such a chip on his shoulder.
Yes. For anyone who wasn't listening, he thinks effectively racism is ingrained from the first day at school, is pretty much what he was saying.
But so much, he only mentions white people because your skin is whiter. So I'm white British and my daughter's father is West Indian.
Right, yep.
Mm-hmm. And the only racism that I know of that she has ever experienced has actually been from an Indian boy in her nursery who, when the children were told to make a circle and hold hands, he actually said, I'm not going to hold hands with a
don't say your daughter's
person.
Name. Yeah, yeah. Let's just call her Nikki. There we go. That'll do it. That's safe. I'm not going to hold hands with Nikki, right? And did
Well,
he?
No, a black and white person's hand.
I see. And did he explain how old was the child?
So this is preschool. So this is probably about four.
Where had he learnt that? I mean, do you think that child was racist?
No, he's just repeating things definitely that he has heard around him.
And his background was what, did you say?
Indian.
How did
but
your daughter...
my point being...
How did your daughter react?
Well, I think she was just a bit miffed. And I mean, she wasn't upset.
Right. What did the, what
she
did
just
the teacher
came home
do?
And told me.
What did the teacher do? Do we know?
I don't really know, because she didn't tell me whilst I was in the nursery. Mm-hmm. And it didn't actually become an issue, because I think back then people didn't really make such an issue of things, to be honest, like they do now.
Right.
Okay. You know, people are up in arms about everything now, whereas, you know, that's what he said, and
okay.
She was... didn't really make much of it, and
to the broad point, this idea of these four-year-olds being racist, I take on board what you've just said about the incident with your daughter and the Asian lad. Do you think someone can be knowingly racist at that age?
No, I think they're too young. I think they just repeat
what they hear. Yeah. All right, look after her, Susan. Thank you. We've gone over time. We will return to this conversation also coming up after the news. More of your views on the idea of whether there should be a menopause action plan, and the idea that the House of Lords, drastic reform, indeed, if they don't turn up, they get sacked. Baroness Smith.
We're not going to play the same games as the Conservative Party played in the last few times by just keep appointing your own party. We want fairness.
It's 9:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news is read by Thomas Watts.
About 100 asylum seekers are now believed to be in detention as part of a new returns deal with France. The reform leader, Nigel Farage, who's described the treaty with Paris as unworkable, is due to set out his illegal migration policy this morning. Reuters and the Associated Press have demanded a clear explanation from Israel after the deaths of 5 journalists in Gaza. They were among at least 20 people killed in a so-called double-tap strike on a hospital. The Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook, has told Nick there is no hypocrisy in Angela Rayner's purchase of a property near Brighton. It's in addition to the Housing Secretary's home in Greater Manchester and Grace and Favour flat in central London. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, very warm in the east, again a high of 26 degrees.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's carry on this conversation about this menopausal action plan. More help to be provided. Apparently, it could help the economy, boost the economy £1.5 billion, but when you try and find out why, there's no substantiation at all to that figure. You could have plucked anything out of the sky. But let's talk about the idea of more flexible working. Now, Kate is in Harrow, and I think we've mentioned your organisation, haven't we? The Latte Lounge, is that right?
Yeah, hi, Nick. A friend was listening to you and said I'd be mentioned, so
you
I
have.
Got a call on.
Thank you for calling in. Tell us a little more detail about what the Latte Lounge is seeking to do.
Well, I mean, I set up originally as a Facebook group 10 years ago because I left my own job because of my misdiagnosed perimenopause symptoms. And, you know, the Facebook group has now got about 26,000 women who have all, most of them have joined because of similar reasons. And we've basically been campaigning with the Make Menopause Matter campaign started by Diane Vanderbrink now since 2018, just for better awareness and support in the workplace. And for women to be supported, for doctors to be better educated in menopause, so that we don't leave our much-loved and hard-earned jobs. So, you know, I'm all for this, and we've been banging on about it now for years and years and years.
Why do you think folk do leave their jobs? What is the impact? Obviously, you're speaking to a man, so I'm not menopausal, so what would I have experienced?
Yeah, it's the symptoms. So it's going from being, you know, I was a mum of four, I loved my job, and suddenly I'm sitting at my desk. I can't think straight. I'm looking at a budget spreadsheet, and it's like reading a different language. I'm exhausted. I'm sweating buckets. I'm headaches. I haven't slept at all night. Mm. You know, very heavy periods, low mood, depression. And you start getting a sort of imposter syndrome, like you're rubbish at your job and you should never have been employed. And, you know, you take time off work and eventually you're either so scared of being fired or, like me, you hand in your notice because you're just mortified and embarrassed that you just can't do your job. And there's a really simple solution. It's really not rocket science. And, you know, I'm 56 now. And we've sort of all these years of hard work. What a waste to the economy and to employers to lose us, have to retrain, to reemploy people to. There's really simple things you can do. And that's what I do in workplaces.
How much is awareness of this growing?
It's been growing massively. I mean, we were a lone voice, especially Diane and I, back in 2015, 2016. But I think since the Davina McCall documentary and so many other menopause campaigners are now talking about it, it's just grown massively. So I think awareness is there and women are now advocating for themselves. And I think employers want to understand and support women. And by the way, it's not just menopause. You know, we should be supporting all people to be comfortable in the workplace. I've got a very pregnant daughter who goes into the office who's, you know, backache and exhaustion. And she would actually be better productively just working from home because she actually could. So it's just understanding it. And it's not difficult. It's very cheap to, you know, come up with very simple solutions to support women.
Lastly, the government is looking to have this menopause action plan in position by 2027. What do you think the key factors should be?
I think in the workplace in particular, I think we need workplace policies which are not just tick boxes, sort of saying that we are going to support you and this is how you can be supported. I think we need menopause champions in the workplace who, you know, if you're feeling rubbish, you can go and have a chat to them and they can ask how they can help you to, you know, stay in your job and how you can be supported. And giving women a time off or away from work just to see a menopause specialist. I've written a book called Midlife Matters. Nick Panay is the chair of the International Menopause Society. He wrote the section in there about menopause. And there's a section in there with loads of suggestions on how workplaces can best support women. So I'm all for it, and it won't cost money, and it will save the economy masses of money.
Thank you for calling in, Katie. We had mentioned you right at the top of the show, so I'm grateful to your friend who told you that we were talking in part about you with the Latte Lounge. Good luck, Katie. Thank you for input on that. We'll have more calls on that. Gail, you'll be the next caller. But I did mention this story, certainly in this hour, I think from the first hour when we looked through the newspapers, and the idea that there could be reforms on the way to the House of Lords. Now, imagine a job where if you turn up for a day's work, you get 350 quid plus, 361 if you want to be absolutely accurate. But it doesn't matter if you don't turn up, you keep the job. Day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out. The job's there, and if you need it, you just rock up and you get £361. That's what's known as the House of Lords. And now the government is keen to bring about some form of reform. And they're talking about peers who fail to turn up and participate in debates in the Lords would be forced to resign under an overhaul. Now, our next guest, Jenny Baroness Jones, has been a pretty outspoken member of the House of Lords. She's a Green Party peer. For those of you with good memories will know she served as Deputy Mayor of London a few years back as well. And as I say, she's strong views and she joins me now. And I've known her long enough, I could almost call her Jen, but I'll call her Jenny. Jenny, you don't... I can see you laughing. Jenny, this doesn't go far enough. It is but a start for you. Is that right? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, it's... My problem with what Labour is doing at the moment is they are so nervous, timid, and they have promised in their manifesto last year to actually consult on producing an all-elected chamber. Now, I think that will be a fantastic move because at the moment, the whole system is corrupt. Yes, there are people who turn up and perhaps take money and don't do much. But at the same time, we have, for example, Boris Johnson appointed 80 peers in less than 3 years. And some of those were extremely controversial. Lebedev, for example. Mm. So, yes, we need massive reform, but Labour is sort of tiptoeing, and it's very frustrating for somebody like me who would like to, who thinks the House of Lords works well, but obviously needs a massive overhaul.
You'll know, because you're in touch with ordinary folk, people will be listening to this, Jenny, saying, oh, she would say it works well, wouldn't she? She's already in there. Explain how you think it should, how it functions currently and how the function could be improved.
What we, our job in House of Lords is to look at legislation that's been passed by the government in the Commons and then see if there are any problems with it. MPs don't have time to read this legislation. That's our job, to actually make sure that it's fit for purpose. And we do occasionally manage to say to the government, you know, you can't do this. For example, a couple of times with the Tory government, we had to say, this is illegal. You can't pass this. It's against the law. And so we read it, we comment on it, we try to improve it. And admittedly, not enough of the House, not enough of the members do engage in that.
So we've got this vast pool of former senior police officers, businessmen and businesswomen, campaigners, environmentalists, an extraordinarily pool. How would you want them to be elected then, Jenny?
I think what we would have to do is ensure, for example, that we have a section of crossbenchers, people who are not politically aligned in any way, because they are incredibly valuable. You know, there's judges and former nurses of 40 years, things like that.
My mate Karan Biramolia, people like that. Great bloke.
Indeed. An amazing businessman as well, of course.
Yep.
But what we have to do is actually get people to stand for election. We could base it on the way that we ran the European elections so that people, local people, have a knowledge of who is there and who is representing Britain in the House of Lords. It's very London-centric at the moment. It needs far more people from, you know, from the North and Wales and Scotland. So, yes, it could do some massive improvement, but not this little tiptoeing that the Labour government is doing.
Lastly, do you think people would vote, though? You talked about elected. You know as well as anyone how difficult it is to get people out to vote at sometimes general elections, local elections, police commissioners. Dear God, people would rather go to the dentist than vote on that day. Do you think people would vote?
I think that's a really good point, because most people don't know what the House of Lords does and they don't understand it. And so that would be part of the election, actually explaining what we do. And that would be good for House of Lords and for democracy. So obviously the Green Party would work very hard to make sure that voter turnout was good, just as we do for the House of Commons.
Always enjoy speaking to you. Look after yourself. See you again soon. Thank you. Jenny, now Baroness Jones, Green Party peer, served as Deputy Mayor of London. A voice of common sense there, but I wonder how common her views are held. Commonly her views are held. We'll talk about the House of Lords in a moment. Have we got time? Yes, let's get one call in before the news headlines. Stay with this conversation about the menopause. Gail's in Farnham. Gail, now you suffered problems. Did you met what's called menopause or meltdown? I don't want to be too confrontational, but is that what you would call it? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Yes, I did. 6 years ago, I ended up leaving my job in teaching and in my entire career, actually, because of my perimenopausal meltdown. That's what I call it. I didn't even know I was in perimenopause. I think that's part of the problem. I think what Katie was saying earlier, Katie from the Latte Lounge, is such an important factor, that awareness is so key. So I didn't even know that I was going through the menopause, let alone my my work colleagues or my employer. The lack of awareness around it, I know the conversations are building and lots of celebrities are talking about it now, and it's much more out there in the open. But if women don't even know that they're going through it, then how are employers meant to know what the signs and symptoms are? So I think it's so important that we get we get people educated, awareness, you know, is increased throughout workforces, 100%.
And again, I'm going to ask you, if there was a menopause action plan, which is what the government's talking about, what, as someone who has experiences, what do you think needs to be in it?
I think really the key signs and symptoms really need to be within the action plan. But I think Katie made a really good point about men coming on board and understanding much more about it. Because I know having run menopause cafes and menopause awareness sessions, lots of women turn up and they want to know obviously what's going on in their bodies and, you know, maybe what to look out for. But really we need to be getting the men on board as well. I think it's so, so important.
Why do you imagine there's resistance from blokes?
Do you know what? I think, I don't know, maybe not resistance, maybe it's more, it might be embarrassment, it might be the fact that they think it doesn't affect them, so therefore, you know, why would they need to, you know, go and
attend the menopause? Well, can I tell you what I think it is as a bloke? Let me tell you what I think it is. Fear of, accidentally causing offence. Saying something that really, really, and I didn't realise I'd said it, and I caused enormous offence, and then suddenly a colleague with whom I've got on really, really well, I said something she deems utterly inappropriate, and then I've blown a 10-year relationship. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm trying to get at there?
I do, but then I think that these awareness sessions that people like myself, people like Katie and Kate Roham, who was talking earlier, put on, I think that's, you know, all the more reason for men to be having these conversations so that they can you know, they can approach it in the right way towards women, so that they're not saying the wrong thing. I totally get you and I understand where you're coming from, but I think it's that conversation piece, yeah.
Gail, good luck with what you're doing and I'm glad you were able to share as much. Have yourself a safe day. Thank you. It's 9:46, LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
Reform leader Nigel Farage will set out his party's plan to tackle English Channel crossings this morning. Reuters and the Associated Press have demanded a clear explanation from Israel over a deadly airstrike in Gaza. A housing minister has defended Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the M25, there are huge delays going anti-clockwise. It's slow pretty much the entire way from junction 29 at the A127 up to 25 at the A10. It's because of an accident at junction 28 at the A12 and a lorry was on fire earlier just after junction 25. So there are huge delays on all the surrounding routes, especially through Epping Forest, Waltham Abbey and Waltham Cross. The A10 as well, southbound from Chesnance, hardly moving at all. Now, elsewhere, the M1 slow northbound up to junction 10 at Luton Airport. A lorry's overturned and only one lane is open. And on the underground, there are severe delays on both the Bakerloo and Victoria lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Penny Mordaunt.
Record numbers of asylum claims have been lodged in Labour's first year in power. Do you have faith that they or anyone can tackle this issue?
Penny Mordaunt on LBC.
Cars make all kinds of sounds. Sounds that reassure, sounds that excite, and sounds that embarrass the kids when you drop them off at school. Stay on top of things with eBay. Enter your reg to find the right parts for your car. And with eBay Assured Fit, you can return them for free if you need to. Sounds like my chauffeuring days aren't over yet. eBay. Things people love. Eligible parts. For full terms, visit ebay.co.uk/EAF.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
£1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. £1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's Save a Menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfill orders, and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
Six packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda, clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's come back to our conversation about whether a child of four can be racist in the light of this report that shows the high number, the soaring number of children being expelled or suspended. Sophie's in Wanstead. Sophie, what's your story? Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Sophie.
A couple of things. First, congratulations. I know you said it's happened, but I'm happy for you.
Thank you very much. Second. So am I. Thank you so much. I'm happy for me. Hooray.
And so is your wife.
Yeah.
And I respect you as a journalist.
Uh-oh.
Please, please don't come at me. I respect you as a journalist. I may not always agree with you, Nick.
Right.
But you definitely get me het up in the morning, especially on a school holiday.
Well, imagine being married to me. Right, go on then.
I'm not defending any caller or criticising any caller, but that call from Neville, I think his name was, completely demonstrates how the man who talked about racism and said...
Lawrence,
I think Lawrence.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think we need to see the veracity and truth in that and not try and cancel it out. For example, if it was a white person or say you were talking about a religion, and like I said, I'm not for any race or religion, I'm for human beings. I'm for human beings, and I wish more people were like that.
Mm.
And if they were, we wouldn't have these problems in the world. But if he was a Jewish person, or if you're talking about a race, a white person, you'd never say, oh, what time was it? Where were you? When? Who? Ever, Nick. And you need to... I think you would acknowledge...
Sophie, he made the assertion that schools are almost complicit in teaching racism, and I don't agree on that.
I'm sure you've read the report that came out after the Stephen Lawrence inquiry.
Yes.
And now, there is sometimes a system can be built in a way that is prejudiced towards a race or a religion or a demographic, and we know that. We know that. I know that. I'm in the education system. I'm very proud of working in a school where I think about 85% of the demographic is from the Afro-Caribbean community. And I'm Asian, but most people, just one second, most people don't know I'm Asian because I don't look, quote unquote, Asian.
Okay.
And it's amazing what you pick up when you're walking around.
Do you think a four-year-old can be racist? I'm not asking about racist language. I understand that. But actually understand what racism is and decide to go against someone because they are black or they are white or they are whatever. Do you actually think that?
We know repetition is reinforcement. That four-year-old might be repeating words parrot fashion.
But they don't know what they mean.
No, one second, but that four-year-old will become an 18-year-old, a 20-year-old, a 25-year-old.
I agree.
If you're brought up with views like that, you will be racist.
But that's not the conversation, is it? The question I'm asking is I'm not asking, can a four-year-old who says racist words go on to be racist at 18? Of course, can a four-year-old comprehend racism? And I'm going to say no, they can't.
A four-year-old knows the difference between right and wrong.
I don't
know. They do, Nick. Honestly, there's an inherent moral compass that children have. All the time. Now, the outside influences might sway that moral compass one way or the other, but whether that child doesn't want to hold someone's hand because they're a mixed-race child... Now, that lady, it was ironic that she was very keen to point out that racism, yes, but then she was very keen to point out that child was Indian, but that then went on to say racism doesn't exist effectively. Now, whether
we all accept racism exists, unfortunately. It's the age at which it starts to exhibit itself knowingly. And that to me, and I think if we look at the report, the highest number of year is year 8, when the child is 12 and 13. That, sadly, I think then, yes, they are in tune. But I just don't believe that a reception class child knows. Again, they know the words, they don't know the meaning. Thank you, Sophie. Look after the children. Thank you. Den's in Birmingham. Thank you for hanging on the line. Den, your go. Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello.
Sorry,
Den.
Please bear with me. I'm really nervous.
Uh-oh. Go ahead, Den.
So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to disagree with you about children as young as 4 not understanding or not being racist. So I'm from Caribbean descent, and I remember being in nursery, so you were about 3.
Yeah.
And having, especially one particular girl, would constantly say racist things to me, all the time. And I'd go home and my mum would say, it's her parents, that's where she's got it from, because she wouldn't have thought these things by herself. However, the impact on me was still the same. You know, I was still hurt, I was still upset.
Of course, yeah.
Her not wanting to play with things after I played with them, because she said black people smell of poo and all of those things.
Okay, that's
racist.
I think we're forgetting
sometimes the 4-year-old that receives the racism. That's my point.
Hold on, do you think she actually understood what she was saying, Den? Yes. She's repeating something that her dad or mum or granddad or somebody you said, she doesn't understand the impact of that. Did you say 3 or 4?
We were 3 and 4, because we were in nursery.
Appalling that the 3-year-old said that, but she didn't know the impact.
So if she had said frogs are yucky because they're slimy, we would assume that she knows what she's talking about, and we wouldn't say, oh, well, you don't know that because you're only 3 or 4. You'd say, okay, well, yeah, you feel frogs are slimy because of X, Y, or Z. Or if she said, I don't like chicken because it makes me feel a certain way, we wouldn't say, well, yes, you do like chicken, you don't understand.
I don't know, that's quite the same, is it?
What she's learned at home is that black people are bad. So she understands that, and she understands that she doesn't like who's in front of her.
I get that, but I don't think she knows why she's saying it. I understand exactly, and of course she shouldn't speak to you like that. I'm not defending it for a second, but I don't think she realises the impact of what she said. Den, I have to go, because so many people, and I've only got a minute. And Chris in Manchester, you've got less than a minute. Just your view on, good morning, you're not so sure about a child age 4 being racist.
Yeah, I agree kind of 100% with what you're saying. I've got kids similar age. I've got 9, 6, and 10 months old. And my 6-year-old recently decided to, in front of family, use the N-word.
Right.
Because he'd learned it at school once one of the other kids was singing a song.
Right.
I have no idea what it meant. Kate, we were mortified, obviously.
Of course.
And we had to explain to him that it was obviously a very naughty word. And it's not, and why not to say it? And he's never said it since, and he understands. Kids can pick stuff up from anywhere, and I think a 4-year-old, if you're going to school with views like that, it must be from home. There's something going on.
Well done for intervening in the fashion that you did, and I'm pleased that the lad realised it. And I do think, not ignoring what Den had to say, which is very, very important as well. Chris, I'm glad we at least briefly, I've got to let you go now, briefly got some balancing, because I am done for another day. Now, Penny Mordaunt's waiting the other side of the news here on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thanks, Nick. You're listening to me, Penny Mordaunt, standing in for James O'Brien this morning on LBC. Coming up a bit later, hospitality leaders say that 90,000 jobs have been lost in the last 9 months in their sector. What impact is government policy having on your hospitality business? And what role does hospitality play in the broader jobs market? If you look at the papers today, they're full of stories about how nothing seems to work. Is Britain still a capable nation? And if not, why not? But first, Reform leader Nigel Farage says he'll withdraw from the Refugee Convention and plan for mass deportations. Do you have faith in politicians to tackle the small boats crisis? You can call me on 0345
60 60 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Reform UK leader Nigel Farage is due to set out his party's plan to tackle illegal migration. A record total of more than 28,000 people have crossed the English Channel in small boats so far this year. Ministers insist they are getting a grip on the issue, partly through a returns deal with France. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
The Reform Party leader is expected today to lay out more details of his immigration plans, including how he would organise the mass deportations of all foreign criminals by putting a duty on the Home Secretary to remove people. And anyone coming to the UK on a small boat would be banned from claiming asylum. He will also accuse the Prime Minister of being on the side of human rights lawyers rather than the British people. Labour say the policy is written on the back of a fag packet, and the Tories say Reform are just copying their old ideas.
A housing minister has told LBC that the government is not opposed to people owning second homes. Matthew Pennycook was responding to claims of hypocrisy over Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. The housing secretary also has a home in Greater Manchester and a Grace and Favour flat in London. But Mr Pennycook's insisted it's not a story.
I don't understand what the charge is in terms of hypocrisy. We have allowed councils to introduce a council tax premium if they want to use it to manage excessive concentrations of second homes and short-term lets in their areas. Brighton and Hove have made use of that, The Deputy Prime Minister will pay it in full. But what we're not saying is that no one can own a second home across the country.
Large crowds have gathered in Israel calling for a deal with Hamas to release the hostages remaining in Gaza. Several major routes were blocked by demonstrators early this morning. It follows the killing of at least 20 people, including five journalists, on a strike in a hospital in Khan Yunis yesterday. Two police officers have been killed and another seriously wounded in a shooting in rural Australia. The suspect remains at large, with people in the small town of Porepunkah told to remain indoors. Mike Bush is the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police.
We believe he is armed. We have deployed every specialist resource into this area to locate him. It is our priority.
And peers could be forced to resign if they do not contribute enough to the House of Lords. The Lords leader, Baroness Smith, says Labour is also keen to press ahead with a compulsory retirement age of 80. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 48 at 92.73. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in eastern areas, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Penny Mordaunt.
Good morning. I'm Penny Mordaunt, standing in for James O'Brien until 1 o'clock. And you're listening to LBC. Now, folks, you might be forgiven for thinking it's Groundhog Day. That's because the papers are yet again littered with various parties' plans of how to stop the boats. Labour has been talking today about its returns agreement, its so-called one-in-one-out policy, or more accurately, 1,800 in and 100 out. And Reform are unveiling their plans in the next hour for how they want to tackle this problem. My question for you is, do you have any faith left that anyone can tackle this issue? And later today from 11, I'm going to be talking about whether this issue has become totemic for a wider problem. Is Britain capable of doing anything? If you look at the papers, there's lots of stories about how nothing seems to work. And I know how that is. A lot of people are feeling that way right now. Are we still a capable nation? And if not, why not?
You can give us a call or WhatsApp us on 0345 6060973, or ping us a text message on 84850. Want to hear from you this morning. So let's turn to that topic that has been discussed on this programme probably about 3,000 times in the last year, the issue of small boats. Now, Nigel Farage is expected to unveil his plans today. He's obviously spoken about this a lot, but he's going into some depth today, we hope. And he is planning on setting out how he's going to arrest, detain and deport anyone who comes here illegally. To do that, he says he's going to have repatriation agreements with countries that are not considered safe, places like Afghanistan and Eritrea, and also that he's going to have arrangements with third countries such as Rwanda and Albania, so that if people can't go back to where they came from, they can go to somewhere else. I know you will have heard a lot of this before from other parties. And he's also got this idea of sort of having a holding pen on Ascension Island, so that people can be placed there, presumably whilst they're waiting to go somewhere else. And that actually is legally a bit easier, because we don't have some of the legal obstacles to do that that other politicians have been grappling with, sending people to Rwanda, for example. And critically, he's going to make it a duty on the Home Secretary that they must deport illegal migrants, and that no one can have their case heard in a court if they have come here illegally. And again, you may have feelings of slight deja vu around that with some of the things that were done under the last government. Critically, and most interestingly, he says he's going to disapply the Refugee Convention. So this was a set of rules drawn up many years ago in 1951. And it is the obligations that nations have to take people for a very broad range of issues. So if they're facing any danger at all in their country, if they're being discriminated in any way, and there's been lots of debate around how the scope of that is too wide. So he says he's going to disapply that, and that he can do so because he views the situation as a national emergency. And that's something that I think a lot of people are focused on right now. I've chaired the Coalition for Global Prosperity, and that is one of the pieces of work that it is doing, looking at rewriting that convention so it's fit for the modern world. It's fit for a world where people have mobile phones, for example, which wasn't the case in 1951. So he says he's going to do that. And of course, we know he said this before, but he's going to remove us from the jurisdiction of the European Court of Human Rights. And that, again, lots of focus has been on that, particularly the practices of the court, which have been viewed very problematic. Organisations like Policy Exchange have done a lot of work on why the practices of that court are no longer fit for purpose. Lots of people hold out hope that it might be reformed, but I have to say that the growing swell of opinion is that it can't be. And he's also saying he's going to repeal the Human Rights Act, which was a bit of domestic legislation which sort of baked in a lot of these things. The European Convention on Human Rights, when that was written, you can derogate from it. We've only ever derogated from it once. But the Human Rights Act bakes in some of these things, and so he is understandably wanting to tackle that. We don't know what he's going to say in detail yet. We will bring you an update on that a bit later on. But he hasn't trailed that he's going to tackle the Supreme Court, which is obviously another one of those legal bodies which has been causing some difficulty when people have been trying to deport people who've come here illegally. And so it'll be interesting to see whether he raises that. In addition to that, we've got Labour today talking about their returns policy. And this is something that Nigel Farage will run into. It's all very well having good ideas, but unfortunately they meet with